Some of what you are about to hear might be deemed offensive by some people. If you are insulted by people arguing about the New England Patriots and pretty much anything else, or by subjects like soap of the slot, gutter cleaners, people with big heads, Bill Polian, Egypt, wedge salads, and drilling for oil, you probably shouldn't listen to PFW in Progress. But if you do listen and hear something questionable, please do not be offended. We're just trying to entertain. In other words, some of the content of PFW in Progress may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
Gentlemen, you are the top 1%.
The elite. Best of the best. We'll make it better.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce you to our commanding officer at Top Gun.
The very first man to win the Top Gun trophy. You will not find a finer fighter pilot anywhere in the world.
Paul Perillo.
I will fire when I am good and ready. You got that?
And Andy. And Andy?
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
Andy Hart.
You're everyone's problem. That's because every time you go up in the air, you're unsafe. I don't like you because you're dangerous.
That's right. I am dangerous.
Eric Scalavino.
I want somebody's butt. I want it now.
For now, anyway.
That's twice. I want some butt.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Gentlemen, this is the real thing. This is what you've been trained for. You are America's best. Make us proud.
Andy Hart, do you think Eric and Fred are making us proud right now at Flowery Branch, Georgia?
Well, I can tell you Fred's making me laugh. I'm not sure if proud is the right word.
Yeah, proud's probably not the right word, but definitely, definitely making us laugh. He is
not intentionally, mind
in
you.
In full-fledged, just to let everybody know, Andy Hart and Paul Perillo are with you for PFW in Progress here in our lovely studios in Foxborough, Mass. At Gillette Stadium, while Eric and Fred are handling things down at practice. Because training camp, contrary to a lot of people's opinions, Andy, is not yet complete. One more day, and that is today. And Eric and Fred are bringing you everything you need to know from
and
Falcons camp. And Fred, by the way, is taking it very seriously. He is in full-fledged reporter attire with his sandals on with no socks, by the way.
Should be a photo on the blog either already or soon.
He's made references to you know, past Patriots first-round picks, you know, calling on history, you know, to sort of, you know, state his case for him. And Eugene Chung. You know, how many guys do you think out there can make references to Eugene Chung? I mean, Fred's going above
Twice.
And beyond everybody.
Twice. That's kind of my favorite part.
Classic.
Not only does he call him Eugene Chung at the beginning of the blog entry, but he uses the first name again for absolutely no reason two paragraphs later when anyone's name would be written as just Chung, the last name. But Fred, that's Fred being Fred. That's the stuff you get from Kirsch words that you get nowhere else.
Absolutely. And Andy and I will do our best to entertain you over the next couple of hours, and we do hope to hook up with one or both. I see Eric is breathlessly trying to work his way in. He's sending us his phone number, you know, when we want him to call. I was kind of holding out hope that we would get Fred himself to sort of inject a little
life.
Well,
you know the problem there.
He'll be all frazzled.
No, iPhone. It doesn't actually work as a phone.
That's a good point.
So to talk to him, we'd have to get a landline.
Did see Fred Hart at work today, and I'm interested to get his impressions. And Andy, you did read some of the early blog posts sort of setting the scene. What was it like in Flowery Branch?
Well, I think the first thing that everyone noted was kind of the unique setting. They have apparently three practice fields, nice brick buildings, woods setting, a suburban area. There's, I guess, a house across the street where there's a guy just selling, like, concessions out
of
his front
yard.
Is there a
guy, you know, with binoculars watching?
Potentially. But it sounds like a very nice little facility and a bit of a change from the media perspective. They get to watch the practice from between two practice fields, I guess kind of a boxed-in area. That's the photo you will see on the site of Fred on the sideline watching practice. I believe he's behind Nick Caserio and Darius Butler. But a little drizzly, a little damp, not a full pads practice, so the tempo a little bit lighter. I guess at one point Brandon Spikes laid somebody out and had to be reminded of Bill Belichick that we weren't laying people out in this practice session.
I have no problem with that.
I guess at one point Belichick was a little upset that the quarterbacks from Atlanta, not just Matt Ryan, but John Parker Wilson, I think, too, completing deep balls on the secondary.
Well, you know, I think it was John Parker
That's
Wilson.
True. Yeah. That's true.
It could have been anybody.
It's actually Mark Wilson.
Charlie Wilson.
But it sounds like it was an interesting change of pace. You know, Bill Belichick spoke with the media before practice and talked about different environment. He was interested in seeing it and seeing how kind of other teams do things at their facilities. Patriots brought their music with them. Bon Jovi and Chesney were
Kenny
playing.
Chesney, yep.
And they called it a home and home. So apparently Dimitroff or Mike Smith was going to pick some other music to mix in for the Saints players. And I guess one coach from the Saints actually enjoyed it and said, it's a little change. We don't normally have music at our practices. So a little bit entertaining. Fred, of course, made note that there were only like 500 fans in attendance, kind of. Oh, you know, in New England, there'd be millions of people.
I actually mentioned that to a member of the marketing department, and I got a similar response. Are you kidding me? I'm just like, you know, here we are, and it's, you know, halfway through the preseason at this point. The novelty of football being back is sort of worn off now. Right. You're almost 3 weeks in, and it's the middle of the week. It's one of the last practices, if not the last practice. Right now, I think fans are just kind of looking forward to games.
Right.
You know, I think fans are ready. No question about it. We saw the crowds here coming out strong, but I think fans are ready for some real football. Got a taste a little bit last night of a preseason game, Monday night football game with the Jets and Giants at the new Meadowlands. Andy, what were your thoughts on the little bit that you watched of that game? I know I didn't see as much as you did. I thought that Sanchez had, you know, kind of right where he left off last year, periods of ineptitude followed by, you know, periods of brilliance.
Yeah, he forced the ball earlier, tried to force the ball to LaDainian Tomlinson, what they were calling his new toy, and into double coverage, and not surprisingly, the ball deflected into the air, was picked off, and set up a Giants touchdown, returned to like the 2 or 3 yard line. After that, he made some nice throws, even some incompletions I thought were nice throws. There was one I saw down the seam, he had maybe Edwards, one of the receivers, just a nice throw. It was incomplete, but you know, within a half a foot of being completed, some nice catches from Braylon Edwards. I would caution that some of his action came against the second Giants defense because for some reason the Jets went all out in the first half and basically went starters throughout the first half, whereas the Giants in the second quarter started bringing in the reserves. The image of the game was, I'm sure everybody's seen by now, Eli Manning. Confusion in the backfield. Brandon Jacobs hits him, loosens his helmet. He gets hit from behind. The helmet comes off, and then he gets hit from the front, and instant blood opened up on his head. He had to be removed, just pouring out.
But when you think as a coach of all the different things that you worry about, you know, for a preseason game, and I know the coaches never say, well, it's football. You can't go out there and play. But, I mean, clearly coaches are more cognizant of injuries in these games than any other. And to have your own player bang into your quarterback, which puts him in a vulnerable spot that allows, I mean, I know it wasn't a serious thing. It looked serious.
Well, yeah, it looks much worse than I'm sure it is.
But they've said it's not a serious thing. You
it's one of those
up,
head wounds that bleeds worse than anything else.
But to have something like that happen has got to be, I can't imagine what Tom Coughlin was thinking when he saw that.
And anyone who watched the game got their fill of John Gruden saying how great everyone is.
Jason Taylor's
going to be great. LaDainian Tomlinson's going to be great. They all have plenty left in the tank. God forbid any of them, you know, just run out of gas and not be good anymore.
Well, as I mentioned, Andy, we'll try to hook up probably around 1 o'clock. We'll give a call out to Atlanta.
Fred
and
first.
See. We'll try Fred first, and then we'll go to Eric. We'll go to Z team.
And we'll go to somebody else.
You know, that's not a bad idea. PFW favorite Mike Reese is out there, and maybe we could get a quality update rather than, you know.
If not, we'll settle for Eric.
Yeah. So we will touch base with what's going on in Atlanta, but a couple of things league-wide that I thought drew some interest. The last couple of days, Aaron Schobel officially has, I guess, decided to retire, says he's filing the paperwork, will not be taking any more calls from any other teams. Houston Chronicle had that report, I believe, yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So that ostensibly would take Schobel off the table. But I did think it was interesting. You mentioned Mike Reese, and he had a report over the weekend that said the Patriots did indeed reach out to him, and that they got the impression that he had no interest in playing for the Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, you know, Mike, I guess, opines that the Patriots then took a step back, not wanting to be a part of any, you know, price jacking, you know, for Schobel on his behalf. So I'm not sure that was ever really a possibility anyway, but it looks like he's off the table. But I thought more interestingly, and you and I talked about this yesterday briefly, a lot has been made of Rex Ryan and his language, his colorful language on Hard Knocks on HBO. And I will confess that I have not seen that at the episode of Hard Knocks yet. I do plan on watching it, but I haven't had a chance yet. I have heard a lot of clips and heard a lot of the flowery language that he has decided to use. Evidently, Tony Dungy expressed his dismay with that and actually said that if he were an NFL team, he wouldn't hire him because of that. I think you and I both kind of agreed that that was sort of silly on Dungy's part.
Yes. I've always kind of supported Dungy from his relatively high horse. His horse got a little too high this time for me to even
way
support
too
him.
High.
Just ignorant.
I don't like that element of Dungy. I do. I think, and I made this comment to you yesterday, I think he's an underrated coach. I think a lot of people think he's lucky because he had Peyton. I think he built a nothing franchise in Tampa Bay and got him on the precipice of the Super Bowl and lost his job, and then John Gruden came in and won the Super Bowl. And I also think he did the same thing with the Colts. He took a team that had Peyton Manning, sure, but what would the Peyton Manning-led Indianapolis Colts in 2001? Not very good.
Sure.
5-11. So I think that he is an underrated coach, but I don't like the sanctimonious holier-than-thou air about him. I don't
Eric
like
Scalavino-esque.
Exactly. I don't like that. I never have liked it. Again, I have been. I agree with the way you put that. I've been somewhat defensive of some of that with him, but not in this case.
Yeah, no.
And for him to be the guy that was sort of the mentor for Michael Vick and sort of pleading with Roger Goodell to allow this guy a second chance, that's okay.
Right.
But if you drop a few F-bombs in a pregame football locker room, that's something that an NFL team should be shying away from.
Right. And everybody does it.
That's rather hypocritical.
More coaches swear than don't.
That's rather hypocritical to me.
More coaches have vulgar language on the field, in the locker room, in meetings, than are, you know, cautious of what they say to players. It's the reality of, first of all, I think just guy talk when a group of guys are doing anything together. And I think it's also the reality of people in positions of power, drill sergeant-esque people, whether it's Army, sports teams, corporate. I think anywhere where there's men overseeing other groups of men and trying to get them to do jobs, there's a lot of vulgarities thrown around. It's real world.
It's life.
So
it's life.
Maybe that's not how it is in church and in the Bible and in Tony Dungy's perfect world, but it's the way the real world is.
Yeah, you know, and I'm certainly with the people who think that Rex Ryan is a blowhard, and I think that he is in a lot of ways, so you know, almost a clown and whatnot. But that doesn't mean I don't think he can coach because he drops F-bombs every other word.
Right.
And if it were anybody else but Rex Ryan and the Jets involved, I'm sure that most of our listeners would agree. I'm assuming that we're going to get some people that are going to side with Dungy on this.
Of course.
Which will be a tough one for Patriots fans because I'm sure it's like, you know, I want to pronounce them properly, Iran and Iraq. You know, this is really, for Patriots fans, there's no one to root for because I'm sure there's no affection for Dungy or for the Jets.
Well, to me, the bigger issue sits with the league and their player conduct and the strides they've tried to take of becoming more fan-friendly and clean-cut and all that over the years, to the point where lately where there's talk about, you know, who can go into the Hall of Fame, who did bad things, whatever. Well, what do you want Hard Knocks to be? Do you want it to really truly be a down, dirty, gritty training camp behind the scenes? Because that, I think, is what reality is. But it kind of flies in the face of your, I'm Roger Goodell, and I want everybody to fall in line and be a good soldier and talk the talk and be nice and all that. So,
and the show is very interesting. And
it is.
And that's the element of it to me.
The real part.
Yes. When I get to see things, when I saw last year in Cincinnati, I watched a lot of the Cincinnati ones, and you know, the early morning hours with the guys, you know, and I don't even know which people, the personnel that are involved, but the guy who has to go and knock on the rookie's door when it's cut down, that's real. You know, that's what I want to see.
But so's the swearing.
Oh, absolutely.
Remember the old real world?
That's what I
want to
see.
When people stop being nice and start being real or whatever, that's what Hard Knocks is supposed to be. When you take away the press conference environment and the little, you know, coach speak or whatever there and just get down to reality. I mean, we heard Dante Scarnecchia on the field use vulgarity all the time. We're not allowed to quote it.
I've heard Bill.
And I think he's the nicest man on the planet, Dante Scarnecchia.
He's a tremendously nice man.
He's a father, a grandfather, but
asks about your children all the time.
It's reality. That's how coaches and leaders work.
That's how a lot of coaches talk. They don't all talk like that.
No, but
I'll tell you right now, that's how your head coach talks.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I love it. I think it's hilarious.
It's reality.
You know, Bill can cuss with the best of them.
Hey, Tony Dungy, you don't like it? What'd Mike Tyson say? Turn your station off.
You know, and again, I do have a lot of respect for Tony Dungy. Sure. I just think he's wrong in this case. And I'm interested to see what some of our listeners think, and if they saw any of the new Meadowlands last night, if they saw the game, any of the game, or what they thought. I'm sure that there's a lot of Jets bashing.
Did you see Fireman Steve getting into a fight almost?
Fireman Ed.
Ed coming down the alley. Because it was a Jets game. It was a Jets home game.
I did see that.
And he was
that.
Coming down, and he got into a shoving match with some guy in a Giants jersey, trying to get down front to do his thing, I assume. And
I didn't see that.
And he's like a paid employee, isn't he? You can't mess with him if you're a Giants guy.
He's paid for the
Jets? I thought he was kind of... paid or
that.
Part of the organization. Or
well, I mean, I'm sure he thinks he's part of the organization. But anyway, if you want to weigh in with your thoughts on some of these things that we're talking about.
More importantly, we need to rewind a little bit.
Webradio@patriots.com is the best way to do it.
A lot of stuff has happened since our last show.
Yeah.
Ty Warren, IR. Derek Burgess back. Jermaine Cunningham didn't play. They won a preseason game. Brandon Spikes is the new best linebacker on the team. Did I miss any? Tom Brady hurt his fingers, didn't hurt his fingers, hurt his fingers again, and then they were taped and untaped. Giselle showed up with the kids at practice. Vince Wilfork moved to quarterback. They decided they're not going to have a defensive line. Vince Wilfork will play quarterback, and you know that would help my little thing, by the way. Just keep one quarterback, and Wilfork's the backup. He seems to be the guy we move, right? Torry Holt went on IR and will not be a mentor to anyone. He will not be around the team, according to Bill Belichick.
Not that interesting.
I did, too.
By the way. I don't think so.
And maybe the most important and, I think, breaking news of the day that we really need to dig into with some investigative journalism, James Sanders was not on the practice field this morning, and I am very, very upset about that.
So if you have some questions on all of those topics, because there were, Andy's right, a lot of things to sort of keep track of from Thursday night against the Saints when our last show took place, a lot of things have happened in the meantime. Webradio@patriots.com, you can reach us that way. Or you can give us a call at 508-543-7482. I had a look at the sign.
Just don't call right now because Steve is actually getting lunch.
543-7482, yes. And you might want to give it about 15 minutes before.
We're the opposite of infomercials. Operators are actually not standing by at this time.
Because we have our good buddy Steve, Phil, / Kevin. Jackpot. Is
off
getting
the door. So you can call now.
He just walked in. So that's good. It's good timing by the young lad. And
they're screwed on run defense, right?
I think they're screwed on run defense? Is that what you're saying? No, not at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't think
Vince can play three spots now.
I think that Gerard Warren is capable of playing at an NFL level.
I think he's capable. Who's playing the other spot at
an capable
NFL
guy
level?
To fill in there. And I think you're going to have problems with your depth now.
You're going to have problems with your starting lineup. Love Mike Wright more than anyone, but if he's one of your three starting defensive linemen,
just run the bleep over. Just stop. I have breaking news.
Eugene Chung did not
practice
today.
Breaking news. We were Scalavino'd with regard to attendance.
Sanders was on the field?
Sanders was there, .. Showed up late, .. Couldn't update the blog. Explain later. I just wanted to get that. That's of utmost importance to you.
He's an idiot.
So my guess is that he didn't see him, but... What are you going to do?
My apologies to Tony Dungy, but Eric effed up.
The important thing is that James Sanders was out on the field and has not missed any practice.
And lunch is here.
That's the most important thing. But
Jesus. You drop those buffalo wings, and I'll drop you.
Wow.
I don't see any drinks.
All right. So, again, webradio@patriots.com. We have a few that have trickled in over the last few minutes, and... you mentioned that Giselle was here with Benjamin Brady, and as well as Jack and Tom's mom. Galen, Tom's mother. I was drawing a blank on Tom's mom's name. So they were here watching practice yesterday. Evidently, Chris in Springfield somehow must have just, I don't know if that was the thing that put him over the top, but can someone tell Tom Brady to get a haircut? And by the way, the Jets suck.
I agree with both.
I do as well. If there is an element of me that really would like to see... It's so conflicting because I hate the stodgy old NFL way of don't say anything. These things are important in the grand scheme of things in terms of if you say something that might upset somebody, it's going to provide locker room fodder and whatnot. So there's an element of me that really wants to see this guy who comes in and just says, you know what, we're better than you, we're going to beat you, and have him have success. But at the same time, it's the Jets. And I can't want that to happen because they're the Jets. Why can't he be coaching some other team and acting like that?
Because he coaches the Jets.
If he were coaching the Kansas City Chiefs, it wouldn't bother me a bit. Or the Seattle Seahawks. You know, I could just root for I'd root for them. You know, it's kind of like when Spurrier took over Washington. I kind of wanted him to succeed with that laid-back attitude, like you don't have to be there 18 hours a day. Now, unfortunately, he proved to all the guys that think you do have to be there 18 hours a day, he proved them right.
Well, not necessarily.
He fell on his face.
Enough guys have failed in Washington where I think it's a little Raiders-esque.
Yeah, I know, but you know how those things work.
I want to get back to why you feel so good about the run defense.
Oh, the run defense. Well, I don't feel great. I'm not saying
you talk.
I don't think it's nothing to worry about at all, the Ty Warren injury. The Ty Warren injury is a significant injury. I think he's a solid player. He has been for a long time. He is especially solid against the run. And contrary to Belichick's assertion that we're used to playing without him, the facts would indicate otherwise. Number one, in 7 years, the guy missed seven games. Number two, the Patriots are 2-5 in those seven games. So they may be used to it, but they haven't done well in that situation. So I don't want to minimize, you know, I hate it when we just completely gloss over an injury and say, well, he's not that good anyway. Or if they trade a guy or if he leaves in free agency, he becomes a lesser player. Ty Warren is a very important player, and he was one of maybe five or six guys that you could pencil in on that defense knowing that that was his spot and he was going to play there. I'm not minimizing the injury. I just think they're better equipped with Warren and Lewis and perhaps Mike Wright kind of staying in a situational role to handle that absence than they have been in the recent past. Certainly more so than they were last year without Seymour, and they really had nobody to fill in that regard. So I don't want to dismiss it. I don't think that your concerns about the run defense are wrong. But I do think they can get by. I think where I'm worried now is you chip away at your depth. And now you get a Gerard Warren to go down in week five. Now you're already three deep in the depth chart, and that's a major concern.
See, the way I look at it is I felt good about filling the hole this year on the right side with Lewis, Warren, Wright. I thought you could get some mix there of playing time that would be good. And I think Warren can play. I think he is a good, solid defensive end. Maybe very Ty Warren-esque in what he brings to the field. I don't know anything about Damian Lewis. I have not seen enough of him. His resume is certainly not stout run stuffer. He's a 4-3 guy, talk about shooting the gaps, all that crap. And Mike Wright, I love. But I think if he's on the field too much, he's going to get run the bleep over. And so I'm nervous. You know, I just was starting to feel good about, okay, we're set up front. Warren, and Wilfork, and those other guys filling in. Well, now I lost a Warren, and now the guy that I was hopeful about has to be good. And a couple of the guys that I know nothing about or don't feel confident in, they also have to be good. Because there's two holes now. We felt good about filling one, but until we proved we filled that one, we didn't know we filled it, and now there's another hole.
No, and listen, I can't argue with you, and I also share your sort of hesitance with regard to Damian Lewis, because I think Gerard Warren, even though he hasn't played in this system, has played in things that are a little bit closer to this system with a style that's a little bit more conducive to this system than Damian Lewis has. And we haven't seen as much as Damian Lewis because he's missed some practice time and he hasn't been out there. I think Gerard Warren, if I'm not mistaken, hasn't missed a snap. He's been out there for every practice. It looks like our trusty producer here, Steve, has some phone calls for us. Which one of these calls? How many of these guys are on the phone? Do we have anybody? Who do we got?
We only have one line, so there can only be one guy.
We have Kevin and Redding.
Kevin and Redding, the good Kevin. Kevin.
How's it going?
How are you, my man?
All right. Yeah, the Warren injury hurts, but he played. He didn't play. He was injured all last year, and I didn't think his play was up to years prior. So if you're losing that Ty Warren and replacing it with Gerard Warren, I would say it might be a little bit of an upgrade. But I think where we're losing it is in the depth. After another guy, you know, because you know there's injuries, you're going to have weeks where guys are out. So I think that's where the we're going to feel it the most.
No, but my point is, you guys seem pretty confident in Gerard Warren. It would have been great if you had Warren, Wilfolk, Warren.
Let me just, you know, I feel confident that Warren can fill in. I don't think Gerard Warren is an upgrade over Ty Warren.
I don't either.
I don't.
But do you think he's an upgrade over Ty Warren, who was injured all last year and
no.
I didn't think played well?
No, I don't. And I think that when he was out of the lineup last year, it was quite noticeable, Ty Warren.
All right.
But I wanted Gerard Warren to be an upgrade over Jarvis Green.
Yeah.
That's my point, is you've kind of moved everything around, and now you're back with a hole. Gerard Warren can only fill one of the two holes. And Wilfork is, you know, can only move outside to left end or right end when needed. To me, I still see two proven commodities for three open spots.
Hey, I want to play a game. I want to do a roster projection.
Go ahead.
Roster projection. Okay, I broke it down. 25 guys on offense, 25 guys on defense. I think last year they went 24 on offense, 26 on defense. But the way I came up with it, I got 25-25. And the three guys, you know, are special teamers, we already know. For QB, you're going to have Brady, Hoyer.
Sure.
Right, and the wide receiver, I got them carrying six wide receivers. I got Welker, Endelman, Aiken, Brandon Tate, Taylor Price, Randy Moss. Any disagreements on those?
Nope. So far, I'm with you.
Tight end, Crumpler, Gronk, Hernandez.
Yep.
Then you've got Matt Light, Conley, Copen, Neal, Mark Lavoy, Sebastian Vollmer, Ryan Wendell, and Rich Ornberger. And that would be nine offensive linemen.
I only counted seven.
Did
I miss one?
Yeah, let me check. Matt Light, Conley, Copen, Nail, that's four.
Yep.
Lavoy is five. Ornberger is six. Wendell is seven. Sebastian Vollmer is eight.
Okay, eight.
Nick, I've got Kaiser down too, but I've got a feeling he may be on the disabled list. But for now, I have him down there as nine.
Sure, I would agree.
Then I've got for running backs, I've got Maroney, Sammy Morris, Kevin Falk, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, and Chris Taylor. Now, hey, I got Fred Taylor out of there, but my thinking here is I think one of the old guys might not make the roster.
I think that's solid thinking, but thinking that both Ben Jarvis Green Ellis and Chris Taylor are going to make the roster, I think is ridiculous.
Okay, so then you think they go with four running backs rather?
I personally do, but I think Taylor's the fourth. I think Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is so overrated and overloved in New England that it's not funny.
I like him.
I know. I figured.
All right.
But I mean, if you look at his numbers, he's not that good.
Well,
what you got Thursday night is what you get.
I think a couple of years, was it a couple of years ago or last year?
Yeah, 2008.
He played in he started one game. I think they were down to like no running back.
Yep.
And to be honest, he didn't have a bad game.
He had a 100-yard game. He also rushed for five touchdowns that season in five different games and averaged less than 3 yards a carry, I believe, in three or four of the seven games that he carried the ball. Has less than 4 yards a carry for his career. Has games where he averages like 1.8. You know, the guy you want to run out of town averages 4.2 for his career. But Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, because he's an undrafted rookie underdog, everybody
seems
to love.
You know what it is, Andy? Because he runs hard.
Right, he runs hard and gets 3 yards. Lawrence Maroney doesn't run hard and gets four and a half.
He gets 10, and then the next two he gets 1 yard or he gets a loss.
And so does Ben Jarvis Green Ellis.
I don't want to delay. I don't know.
I agree with everyone's frustration with Lawrence Maroney, but Ben Jarvis Green Ellis is not the answer, the replacement, or the future.
I just think having a guy like that who runs hard like that, you can find a good use for him.
I still think you can get Fred Taylor. I think you can get production out of. Sure,
the
injury's a concern, but
the thing about Sammy Lawrence and Fred Taylor that scares me is I know during the course of the year they're probably going to be gone for three or four games.
Sure, and that's why you have both, and you hope they don't overlap.
All right, D linemen, six. Gerard Warren, Vince Wilfork, Damian Lewis, Myron Pryor, and Brandon Bedrick.
Where's Mike Wright?
I said Mike Wright. Mike Wright, Vince Wilfork, Warren, Pryor, Lewis, Bedrick.
Yeah,
now, the guy left out is Ron Brace.
Sure, I'm okay leaving him out.
And that kills me because I was high on him.
I'm good with the six that you picked.
Okay.
I don't know if that'll be all that make it, but I think those six are probably going to make it.
All right. Well, I got six D-linemen, linebackers, right? I got nine. Kelly Bantakane, Mayo, Guyton, Burgess, Ninkovic, Morrell, Spikes, Woods, McKenzie, and Cunningham. Now, I've got nine guys, but I'm thinking that three out of those guys are fighting for two roster spots. And I've got Pierre Woods, Rob Ninkovic, and McKenzie all battling, those three guys battling for two roster spots.
That's certainly possible, and a lot of people think McKenzie might not make the team. I think he will. I've seen enough where I'd like to see him continue to develop. You know, he hasn't played at all, really. He's only been in pads for a month now.
Now, has he really fallen off in practice? Because it seemed like the first week, 10 practices, there was a lot of good things you heard about him, and then now not so much.
Well, he had one huge hit that I think swayed everybody's image of him into, wow, he's this big run-stuffing, goal-line presence, physical. He hasn't had that since. You know, it's hard to say. He's been in the mix. He's a bit of a stiff player, and I don't mean he's a stiff. I think he's stiff upper body. I think he's a run stuffer. I don't think he's all that flexible and fluid. Can't really drop into coverage, in my opinion. But I still think there's a place in a 3-4 defense for a stout inside linebacker, and I'd like to see him try to develop, maybe.
All right. Well, the cornerbacks, I've got Butler, Bowden, Willite, Wheatley, McCourty. Now, one of those guys, I think Willite or Wheatley, you could replace with a Kyle Arrington.
Mm-hmm. I would. I would replace Willite.
Yeah, it seems Wheatley has more upside. I know he was disappointing last year.
He has been disappointing, and the Willite thing, I think he's been excellent in this camp.
Great.
I think he's really showed up in a lot of practices, and Andy and I have been talking about him a lot. I think Willite is a guy that kind of ascended quickly to a prominent role in this defense. I've been in the minority because a lot of other people have seen plays and seen potential. I haven't seen it. I'm not sure exactly what vaulted him to the top, other than the fact that other guys sort of fell by the wayside, in Wheatley's case, due to injuries. His rookie year, he was a starter at this time last year. Andy's talked about this a lot. At this time last year, he was kind of entrenched as a starter. Right now, I think his roster spot is hanging by a thread, whereas I think Wheatley is really on the upswing. I would be very surprised if Wheatley got cut based on what he's done on the field.
All right, let me go to safeties. Merriweather, Chung, McGowan, Sanders, and also I have down here Josh Barrett.
Well, he'll be on IR, so he.
Well, but my understanding was, in order for him to get for Denver to put him on the IR, they had to put him through waivers. Now, my thinking is, wouldn't the Patriots also have to put him on waivers to get him on IR?
No, they had to put him on waivers now to put him on IR.
Yes,
at the end of camp, they wouldn't have to.
Okay. Because my thinking was you're going to have to get him on the 53-man roster,
no.
Then put him on IR without going through waivers.
No, they won't have to do that. At the final cut, which is after the fourth and final preseason game, when they have to get down to 53, they can put him on IR and not have to go through any waiver process and, you know, risk losing him.
All right. So you think they'd go with four safeties?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that gives us one roster spot. And what I think is you're probably going to add another lineman. And out of Darrell Richard, Kyle Love, or Ron Brace, who would you guys take?
Probably Brace, just on the draft status.
Second round.
The theoretical talent and potential.
I'll tell you, based on what I've seen on the field, Kyle Love.
I would agree.
Has he played well?
Yeah, I mean, as well as we can see from a defensive lineman in limited views in camp. But, you know, Brace has done nothing. He has never impressed me once with anything. So it would strictly be on his potential and the theory that they liked him on draft day and they might still like something about him, his physical tools.
All right. So, I think that's a pretty logical roster breakdown.
Yeah, I mean, sure. There's probably, three or four that are going to change. I mean, I think your offensive line, I don't know, Kazier's not going to – I don't think Kazier's going to be part of that, so I think you might need another tackle.
Yeah.
I think clearly the top six guys, I think, are set in stone.
Yeah, I don't think this year, you've seen them the last couple of years make a kind of end of, the first couple of days after roster cuts, make some trades and bring in guys. To be honest with you, I can't really see them doing that much. Maybe with the exception of, like you say, maybe bringing in a defensive lineman that they could pick up from somebody.
Or an outside linebacker. Right. I could see that happening.
Yeah, outside linebacker, D lineman, and O lineman.
Yeah, I actually think the extra lineman might be Bussey based on the position
exactly
flexibility
the
he's shown.
About.
He can play tackle and guard. And if he can legitimately do that at an okay level, I think he'll be on the roster.
Now, one last thing before I go. I was watching the Hard Knocks, and the general manager for the Jets, Tannenbaum, is just such a huge DB. Just huge.
I agree. I've always thought that about him, but what in particular swayed your opinion?
Everything. Just the way he was talking. He was kind of cocky. I just, just really want to punch the guy in the face,
Okay.
I hate the Jets to begin with. And I think he was the, Mangini got a lot of the blame for the Spygate thing, but I think a lot of it was Tannenbaum. And, I realize his family's local. He's a local guy, but just really unlikable guy. Don't like him at all.
That's his reputation. I don't know him personally, and I've never met him once. But Kevin, the way you just described that whole thing is the reputation that he has in some of the circles around here that Andy and I walk in. You don't find a lot of people saying a lot of nice things.
You, the ball in the hole.
He's
drafted pretty well.
He's probably a great friend with Borges.
Well, he has. I mean, Andy just made a point. He has an eye for talent because he has drafted very well. So, whatever, he's done his job reasonably well. I don't know if he is necessarily the most scrupulous NFL businessman that are out there. But, Kevin, solid job on the roster. Appreciate the call. We'll check in probably next week. That's Kevin in Reading. That's the good Kevin, Andy. So
I haven't heard from the bad Kevin in a while.
I do want to thank, and my monkey in the booth here makes a good point. I want to thank Paul Darville for being today's lunch buyer, which was above and beyond because, first of all, there's only two of us, and he still felt it necessary to take care of us. Actually, three of us because Kevin's eating. You're eating too, aren't you, over there, Phil? But lunch provided by CBS Scene today, which is a little bit out of the norm for us, a little high class.
It's good, though.
It was excellent. Very good. So, again, Paul, we want to thank you for that and for all that you do for the show, which is quite a lot.
Does he have an email?
He does not have an email in here as of yet. And if he does, I'll make sure I read it. I wanted to get to this. It's kind of long here, but it's titled Camp Anecdotes. So I wanted to get to that and see where we go from Steve in Connecticut. He says he went to camp practice on Sunday with his father and two of my daughters and thought I'd share some anecdotes with you. Eric, if you could, please explain to everyone what that means. My dad is an old school fan, and as we walked through the hall, he regaled me with personal stories about the players and scenes depicted in the displays. He was brought to tears watching the video in the theater, remembering the humble beginnings up to the first Super Bowl win. After that, we walked up to the PFW booth to get a handy roster list, and I asked the kids there, are the guys here today? After a second of puzzlement, he replies, what guys? I said, the guys from the show. Another confused pause, he says, what show? Undaunted, I pressed the issue by saying, the radio show, Patriots Football Weekly on the website, while gesturing to a copy of the PFW magazine on the table before him. That seemed to work as recognition sprang into his face. That's a crack staff you got there. Anyway, the practice was great. It was the highlight of the day for one daughter. Bass Pro was the highlight for the other daughter. At the end, we scrambled to the rope and got Myron Pryor's autograph, to which one of my girls said, "Daddy, it looks like a chicken. It looks like chicken scratch." That's pretty much what all of the autographs look like. All was good, but unfortunately, when Mike Wright came by, he signed for one of my daughters but took off before signing for the other. I understand the players can't stand there all day, and it was unfortunate timing. Some whistle or horn went off, and all the players immediately turned around and left. This left my daughter in tears. I successfully explained to my girls why Brady didn't come over and why Welker didn't make it over to us before leaving, but I was unsuccessful in justifying how one daughter got an autograph while the other daughter got two. So if there's a way to send Mike Wright a letter or something and ask him to send my other daughter an autograph, that'd be pretty cool. Please let me know. Thanks to the organization for a fun and a free day. That's Steve in Connecticut, winning my kids over to Patriot side day by day, despite my in-laws' New York propaganda. So, you know what? That's actually one of the guys that there's a possibility that we might be able to work something out.
One of the nice ones.
Talk amongst yourself. I just got logged out for some reason.
Although we should probably tread lightly on asking for autographs in the locker room, given the turmoil out in Denver, where a couple Cincinnati reporters apparently asked Tim Tebow, oh God, oh football that he is, with his third quarter action, for an autograph and got kicked out of the facilities.
It's unbelievable to me.
Have either one of you ever asked a player for an autograph?
Of course not.
Nor would I.
I wouldn't think
First
so.
Of all, I would never ask anybody for an autograph, period.
Well, I would. If Bo Jackson comes in the locker room, I'm going to break the rule.
I meant for
a very, very select few like that.
I meant for like a child, like one of your kids.
Nope. No, I've never done that. It's against the rules.
Yeah, no, it is. I was just curious.
And we could get fired for that.
Absolutely.
In all seriousness.
Hence all the signs.
I'd ask for somebody who could play in the National Football League, not a third string fullback.
True.
Like Tebow, who's God's gift to God.
Wow. You are tough.
I really do hate him.
All right. Richmond. It's Nico in the Philippines.
Playing the role of Fred Kirsch in today's performance is Paul Perillo.
You morph right into Fred when you sit in this chair.
Richmond in Nico in the Philippines.
Although, I know we're only 45 minutes in, but I've yet to belch into the microphone.
It's coming, though.
It will come soon. Apparently, it took a lot of time for Fred to know his miscue. He just left a message in the blog, and I thought the Andy blog was hilarious. Kirsch Words is a lot more funny. Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
I wasn't
listening. No, he didn't.
What did he say?
He said, I thought Andy's blog was hilarious, but Kirsch Words is a lot more funny.
My humor is intentional.
This was in regards to the Eugene Chung update. I just wish he had done play-by-play. What is this? Via what? Cover It Live. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's the thing he does during the game.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
True Kirsch Words. Well, the problem was they were standing up on the sidelines, so I think they had some issues. They need one of those things that you can hold your laptop around your neck and type on you. Well, he just could set it
on his
large stomach. But, you know, that was the issue, I think. And if you see the photo on the blog, which hopefully is on the blog, he was just kind of sitting there with his notebook taking notes and then updating later at some point.
All right. Next up here is Ken in New Mexico.
Ken in New Mexico. He emailed twice last show, I remember.
Yes, and somehow you... somehow forgot it. I don't know.
Somehow you forgot it.
First off, after watching the first quarter of each preseason game.
Patriots are the best team in the
Patriots,
league.
Patriots, Dolphins, Bills, Jets, several times. I'm gaining confidence that the Patriots will win the AFC East again this year based on a quarter of the preseason. I know it's only the first preseason game and things can change before the season, but would you guys agree with me or disagree with me based on what you've seen of the first versus the first this week? I would have to have seen the first versus the first of any other team besides the Patriots and the Saints.
Well, I will tell you, I thought it was a good sign that Mark Sanchez forced a throw to LaDainian Tomlinson.
That's a great sign.
And
that's exactly what he did last year.
That LaDainian Tomlinson is who I thought he was, a guy that's not LaDainian Tomlinson anymore. John Gruden kept telling me he's got plenty left in the tank and he's going to be big. I didn't see it. I just saw, there were like a little screen pass that he was just out of his reach. There was some runs that I thought the old LaDainian would have broken and didn't. If they're going to, A, force LaDainian Tomlinson to be a part of the offense, and B, if Mark Sanchez is going to force the ball on occasion, I think it's good news for the Patriots. And C, I didn't see Darrell Revis on the field, so that's also good news for the Patriots.
As for calling Fred to get an analysis instead of Eric, please don't. Eric may be a bit pompous, but at least he'll give you straight information instead of ridiculously stupid arguments and homerism.
Straight information? I don't think so.
I know Fred is the boss, but PFW in progress is better when he's not on it.
Wow.
Wow.
Who's this from?
That's a first.
Cannon, New Mexico?
Yes. He just became my favorite emailer of all time, but that is a first. By the way, I wrote on Thursday, and Andy said he never remembers hearing from a Cannon, New Mexico. I've been listening since the He Who Shall Not Be Named days and have written in at least 50 times over the years. Though the first 3 years or so were from Huntington Beach, not New Mexico.
That may be what confused me.
I figured someone with such a gigantic head would have a better memory.
No.
And finally, I love what I've seen from Brandon Spikes and think Jonathan Wilhite is an upcoming cut. Well, with that last paragraph,
both are possible.
I'm 100% in agreement.
Because I am of the belief that Spikes is already better than Mayo. I can't even say it with a straight face. I thoroughly impressed, as we talked about on some of the podcasts with Brandon Spikes, his style of play, the, you know, 1 second read and then explode into a guard or a blocker. I like what I see from him.
Before we take a break here, Junior, inside the glass, do we have another caller, Brad? Is Brad on the line now from Maryland?
Yes, sir.
Brad in Maryland. How many times am I going to call him a different name?
How you
today?
Doing today?
Did you meet the other guy from Maryland? I think it's Brian.
Yeah, I know. I heard you Thursday. You're getting confused. Paul was calling him Brad. And everybody else was calling him Brian.
Yes. I'm an idiot. What do you want me to tell you? And I wasn't even sitting in Fred's seat that day.
Hey, man, a lot's gone on in the last 4 to 5 days, hasn't it?
No kidding. Holy crap.
You guys were starting out with all this Jets and Giants stuff, and I'm going, hello, we really don't care.
That's true.
But anyway, just a quick thing. Fred will never read Ken from New Mexico's emails again in the next 5 years.
That's probably accurate because he doesn't take criticism well.
You guys have touched a little bit on the D-line, and I had made a note that I still feel good about it, but I have to agree with your comment that, to me, Mike Wright will equal the Jarvis Green of 2010 if he's a starter.
Right. He started 9 games last year. So
I agree. Mike Wright is definitely equal to Jarvis Green. No question.
See, I think he's a better player, but I think he will equally be found by opposing offenses if he's out there with too much regularity.
I don't want either one of them on the field on a regular basis.
It's part of what the NFL has become. You know, when you've got offensive linemen that are 340, 350, and agile, and you're putting a guy out there that's only in the 290 range, yes, he can be strong. Yes, he knows leverage. I understand that. But at some point, you're just going to line up your guy and just pancake him.
Yep. And not only do those offensive linemen have some athleticism to match his, he is asked to man up with them, basically.
Right.
True gap. Hold stout at the point of attack, which, you know, if this were a 4-3 scheme and you were just asking him to shoot a gap and beat a guy to a side, maybe he could do that. But you're right, these guards and tackles that are 340 pounds, he's supposed to get underneath their shoulder pads and control them, and I think it's an uphill battle for him.
We saw that for Jarvis.
Yeah.
Jarvis, we saw him for what, 4 years be this neat third down, you know, just fly off the edge and get to the quarterback, but on first and second downs, he got ground into the dirt.
So we're back to where we started at the defensive line, I think.
And just to interrupt real quick for a second, Mike Wright has played in all 16 games each of the last 2 seasons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. No. Like you guys said, I love Mike Wright as far as his situational.
Yep.
Coming in on third down to give Wilfork a break. He's a little quicker off the ball than Wilfork maybe is.
Yep, the two-man fronts.
Yeah, you know, I just think it's another case of, if we're going to stick with a solid 3-4, those three guys have all got to be over 300 pounds. We can't have the 6'4", 285, 292 guy anymore and expect him, like you said, to just stonewall this 340-pound offensive lineman that's coming at him play after play.
I agree.
I'm with you.
I'm wondering, as we've gone on in camp, I mean, we've got, in the last two drafts, four low round, but seemingly coming out of decent school defensive linemen.
Yep.
Maybe it's not this year, but I really think between Pryor and Richard and Diedrich and Cade Weston, thank you, that we will pick up the next Ty Warren out of that group.
Well, I don't know about the next Ty Warren. Ty Warren was drafted with the 12th pick in the 13th pick in the draft. I mean, this is a guy that entered the league with a lot of talent and a lot of upside.
But Ty Warren was never asked in the 4 years, 5 years that he was with Seymour He was never asked to do anything but stop his spot.
Right.
And he did that. Ty Warren has never been a big sack guy. He's never been a big quarterback pressure guy. But what he did was held his ground and right. let that left outside linebacker.
My point is, he was a top 15 talent.
And he did it extremely effectively.
You're saying that some guy drafted in the sixth round will just develop into that, and I don't know if it's that easy.
But the key word you just said is develop. I'm not saying he will walk in. In other words, I don't think any of those four guys could hit the field today and take Ty Warren's spot. And 9 games in, everybody on PFW is saying, man, is it not incredible how this guy, whoever, fill in the blank, has picked up for Ty Warren. But maybe 2 years from now, we will be saying that.
Maybe.
I think if their
talent was close to Warren's, I think they would have been drafted a lot higher.
And this is part of what I was talking about earlier. When we lose guys, or for whatever reason, that they sign as free agents somewhere else, and you know the Fred Kirsch attitude kicks in. He wasn't that good to begin with. I think Ty Warren is extremely effective. I agree, Brad, that he's not been asked to necessarily provide a lot of pass rush. I think 6.5 or something like that is his career high in quarterback sacks, and he has done very little of that lately. But I think there's a noticeable difference when he's been out of the game on that side of the, and that's where offenses want to run, right, Andy? Generally, offenses want to be right-handed. You want to run to the right side, and
right.
Ty Warren basically stopped you from doing that over the last 7 years.
And that's what I'm. But
and
I'm,
I don't think one of these guys is going to step in and do that anywhere near as effectively as he did.
That's why I think offenses will be ambidextrous against.
Now, do I say it's impossible to get a sixth or a seventh round pick to do that? No. Maybe one of those guys, but I would be skeptical that one of those four guys is going to be Ty Warren in 3 years.
But I think if all we say is we're going to put Mike Wright in there and let him go, I think we're setting ourselves up for another Baltimore game.
Yeah, that won't happen.
I agree.
Offensive line, I feel, has a lot more lingering questions. I'm really not feeling warm and fuzzy about what's happening there.
You think the offensive line has more questions than the defensive line?
I think questions, not capabilities.
He's
but
more
questions.
Worried about the loss of Logan Mankins than he is the loss of Ty Warren. I think it's a very rational
I think
thought.
It's very rational.
Continue, Brad. Go ahead.
Two-thirds of the D-line is a question and one-fifth of the offensive
line.
No, we're just talking about one
guy
for one.
Now, wait a minute. Mike, wait a minute now. Kazier is like we are all thinking may very well be IR before the
Sing it, Brad.
Sure.
I think that Mankins isn't coming back.
I agree.
I think Stephen Neal has not made it through a full season in the last 3.
I agree.
We have Matt Light, who's been a question mark for the last 2 years on the left.
Okay.
Because of injuries. I'm not saying capability. Take away Taylor and Schoble, and Schoble's now retired, so that should make his life easier. So you really have Copen and Vollmer, who we can say with pretty good assurance that's some solid guys right there. The other 3 all have serious question marks.
I'm not sure I would include Copen in the solid guys. I have my doubts about him, and I certainly have my doubts about him
without Mankins
and Neal. Because well, you're right about Neal going down at some point, so there's legitimately a point where it could be Conley, Copen, Wendell. And I think Copen would seriously have issues there not being supported by 2 big, strong,
bingo.
Athletic guys.
I was just going to say that because just like I said about Mike Wright on the defensive line, when you've got defensive tackles that are the size of Wilfork, a guy that's only 290 is going to have a harder and harder time matching up on that one-on-one. And Wendell is very undersized. Copen is I would say, undersized. Mm-hmm. And Conley is average. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a Leonard Davis that's right. sitting there at 350 pounds to eat up a defensive tackle.
I have my concerns about the offensive line as well. Andy and I, the reason why we were making some sarcastic comments, Andy and I sort of debated this in the most recent issue of PFW. It is the point-counterpoint. What injury was bigger? You know, the situation at left guard or the situation at left defensive end. And, you know, you can make an argument for both. I think Andy's point is you're already dealing with a man down on the defensive line.
Man down.
But to me, I was matching it up more the one for one, the one spot for the other spot. I think Gerard Warren is a better fill-in for Ty Warren than Dan Conley is for Logan Mankins.
I agree. And I would even say Lewis is a better fill-in than Wendell.
Maybe.
Well, Wendell, I mean, you're going way down.
But isn't that who was the next in line?
Yeah, when Neal goes down, yeah.
Right. You got Ornberger, Bussey, or Wendell.
You're assuming injuries.
Right.
What happens when Wilfork goes down?
Yeah, I'm not assuming that.
You want to assume injuries. My point would be, you're nitpicking, in my opinion. I agree with a lot of your assessments, but you have a Pro Bowl center. You have an all-pro left tackle, theoretically.
Theoretically.
While on defense, you're penciling in guys who have never been that caliber of a player, are new to your team, are unknowns in your scheme, are new to the scheme. I just think there's one certainty to me up front on defense. It's Vince Wilfork.
But Bill has never expected his defensive linemen to be the ones to make the pressure. That was my point.
Okay,
that we need serviceable
guys. If they're not going
to
do it, and you're going to put Jags at outside linebacker, then who's doing it?
Well, see,
that's
now,
my point too. You're pairing up Tully Bantakane, who at best is a situational pass rusher on the outside, but he may be starting behind Mike Wright. And to me, you might as well put a bullseye on that area of the field and say,
that,
run, and have some fun.
Now that's my next point, was the Burgess-Cunningham effect. Burgess comes back, Cunningham's hurt. We're not going to get to see the continuing growth of Cunningham, who probably wasn't going to be a starter anyway. We have Burgess coming in, admitting that he's behind the rest of the team because he hasn't been there for 24 practices. You're right. Now it's that trickle-down effect, and you're saying I'm nitpicking, but it's that trickle-down effect that starts building up
to
some big problems.
But you're saying it's worse on the offensive line where there are guys that have proven themselves as Patriots in this scheme at four of the five positions.
Yes.
The only one that isn't is Dan Conley and or left guard.
Well,
but you're projecting Neal will miss this many games and Light stinks.
Well, I'm
and
only
Copen's
projecting because
around.
That's what's happened. I'm not pulling something out of the sky. It's what's happened over the last 3 years.
Tell you what, you're pulling out of the sky the fact that Damian Lewis and Gerard Warren are the perfect fill-ins on the defensive line.
No, I never brought up Lewis as a perfect fill-in.
This is typical
like
Andy.
Game.
He's exaggerating to make his point.
I did like the game. I liked. I got to see it on the internet. I found a site on the internet that was broadcasting it.
Well done.
And I thought Brady and his toys looked good.
Yep.
I thought they looked crisp. I thought Price ran an excellent route on that out route, dragging the toes like he was a veteran.
That was Tate.
Tate. I'm sorry,
yeah.
Tate.
I didn't mean to.
No, you're right. You're right, Tate. But, he dragged his toes like a veteran, and I think that is going to be our salvation. I think we are going to live and die again with, can there be that third wide receiver? When we look back and Gaffney, everybody was like, wow, he's a former first-round pick, but he's been a washout. No, he's never really done anything. You know what? He came in, and he was so serviceable, and he knew how to run the route, and he knew how to get open, that they couldn't roll the coverages. And if we can get Price or Tate or Edelman, who was phenomenal, I think we need a new drop-in. I think instead of Mendenhall, it needs to be Edelman. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, we'll see.
The punt return was excellent. I mean, we talked a couple weeks ago about guys falling into the laps of the Patriots. Like we were talking about Schoble, and you said Ted Washington. If Edelman didn't fall into our laps as the Wes Welker, version 2, I don't know what did.
It was a good draft pick.
I think he has. But I think he's figured out, you know what, I'm not God's gift to speed. I'm not a Jenkins. I'm not a Tate. I'm not this guy that's going to fly down the field. But if I can figure out how to get that half step open, that's all my quarterback needs.
Sure.
And he's doing it. He's doing it just perfectly in line with Welker.
Brad, we're going to have to let you go. We have a very important caller, I believe.
All righty. Well, thanks,
trying
guys.
Trying to work his way
See
in.
See Brad. But, yeah. Oh, Brian, we said hi.
Is Fred trying to get in? Is he in? I mean, or is because the
is
line
yet?
Was the line was tied up there, so we had to cut that one short. But
Fred was just hearing busy signals, I think.
Okay, so we're gonna
actually he had to call me to get the phone number for the studio.
We're efforting the illustrious Fred Kirsch, and I'll have to tell
him.
He's
not gonna have service. That's the bottom line. It's gonna be a bad reception on his cell phone.
It's a good point. Let's go to some more emails here. Gruden and Jaws last night. Chris in Toronto. I think you caught some of this stuff.
Yeah. What did I catch?
You guys were discussing last night's game earlier. Is it just me, or do Gruden and Jaws hate each other? Toward the end of the broadcast, Mike Tirico asked for their thoughts on the two teams. Gruden was very high on both, picking them to win their divisions. Jaws, not so much. Gruden went on to rip Jaws for being a Philadelphia guy and anti all things New York, to which Jaws responded by ripping Gruden for being fickle, flavor-of-the-week type. At first, I thought it was downright comical, but the awkward silences between each barb made me wonder how real their banter really was. Did you guys catch any of this?
I didn't catch the end. I do not think they care for each other. And I think because Gruden is so over-the-top positive and the next guy that he rips will be his first, I think Jaws feels like he has to bring some objectivity to the table.
Right.
It's kind of like when you and I are on with Felger, we have to balance out whatever he's spewing. Well, Gruden just spews, every player is great, every player is going to be an impact player, every team has an upside. And I think Jaws says, this is the NFL. Not everybody's great. Some people are going to suck. There's going to be busts. There's going to be teams that win two games. Let's talk about it.
And I think it's funny because Jaws. I think of Jaws as being one of those guys.
Yeah, he was.
Every guy is great.
Point.
So if he's
overshadowed. He's a suck-up until he's on with Felger, who, you know what I mean? Yeah. It changes
how he's overshadowed
how you,
by Gruden, suck-up.
Gruden is the biggest suck-up. He's very good, yeah. But he's a suck-up to all
so
suck-ups.
So that's going
to
be interesting. But
speaking of suck-ups.
Right. We have the ultimate of all homers on the line now. Freddie.
Hey.
How's Eugene Chung?
He's doing good. They actually brought him back, and he looks good in the Patriots' backfield.
He must have lost a lot of weight if he's playing secondary.
Yeah, no, he's excellent. So you caught that, huh?
And yeah. So did a number of commenters on the blog. I went into Paul's office, and I go, when Fred blogs, what's more important, factual accuracy or humor? And we decided humor.
I said humor.
So we left it up for a while.
That's not the first time I've called Patrick Chung Eugene.
No.
That's okay.
We were also wondering why you referred to him by first and last name multiple times in the same story.
Well, that's not also not the first time he's done that.
Well, no, not in the same entry.
Yes, it was. It was a paragraph later.
Well, what whatever.
So how are you liking, Freddie? We got a nice picture of you on the blog, too. Hard at work out there between
a lot of people seem to want to take pictures of me today for some reason. I don't know.
I would just look down and you'll know why.
I saw you hard at work out there in between the practice fields.
I would call you a media whore, but I feel like that would be offensive to whores.
Certainly taking full advantage of the rules. When in Rome, huh? You're live blogging, you're quoting coaches on the field, having a ball down there.
Unbelievable.
Hey, and let me apologize to you, Freddie, because I know you thought that would be the case and I was skeptical, but evidently you had some inside info. You were right. I was wrong.
We were literally, you know, feet from the players on the sideline, which is interesting because you catch a lot of stuff you don't normally get in, you know, some of the banter, some of the, you know, back and forth between players on the same team. Eugene Chung is really talkative out there.
Unbelievable.
Did you do that on purpose? Know, please tell me you did that on purpose. His name is Patrick.
Patrick Chung? Oh, is that his name?
Now he sounds like Craig in South Carolina.
It was a different perspective totally. And, you know, a couple of things, you know, Belichick said, and I specifically went to Stacey James and said, can I write this, please? And he was like, no way, no. You can't quote the coach. So I'll have to tell you off the air. But,
okay.
You know, some good stuff, you know,
was
sarcastic.
Was that when he was not happy about the secondary? Was there some displeasure there?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I referred to it, but I didn't.
Is this
going to
be the part of the show where you try to get it out of him?
And I also he was. You wrote something about Brandon Spikes laid somebody out, and that was not really appropriate for the setting.
Well, no, but that was okay to write that, but I didn't.
No,
say
I mean actually laying somebody out in a practice where you're not supposed to be hitting him, and Belichick had to explain to him that, right?
Yeah, I mean he didn't leave his feet or anything. He just kind of, you know, ran into him like a wall, and the guy hit him and just dropped to the ground, and then. Belichick reminded him, you know, we're just touching up here. We're not doing that. But you know, it was just one of those things where I think Spikes was just in the right place at the right time, and this guy was just, you know, coming down on the, you know, from catching the ball and I'm like a brick wall. So
jeez, can you give us the overall? And
who,
stop pressing.
Who keeps doing
that? That's you. Stop pressing a button with your fat cheek.
I'm not doing it
with your fat cheek. Can you give us? Last week, excuse me.
What is wrong over there?
A little buffalo sauce in my throat.
Oh, for God's sake.
Last week, I thought the Saints really dominated that first practice, especially Drew Brees having his way with the secondary. Is that the same case with Matt Ryan today? Did the passing game of the Falcons take advantage of the secondary of New England?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I wasn't watching the Patriots, but the Falcons passing when Ryan was in there, definitely had the advantage when, you know, some of the other guys came in, Redmond and John Parker Wilson or whatever his name is, came in. It was definitely a different tune. In fact, they had one interception, and in the very next play, they should have had a second. So it was a lot different when Ryan wasn't in there. But when Ryan was in, yeah, they definitely had the advantage over the Patriots defense. And from what, you know, the little I saw on the other side, it looked the same way when Brady was in. Moss caught a deep ball, like on one of their initial plays, which was nice to see.
Freddie, what was the overall atmosphere like there? I know that you you had mentioned that there weren't a lot of people, but the facility itself, you know, the practice.
Beautiful
there.
Facility. You know, this is their year-round facility. This is where their offices are. So it's really nice. They've got a big building, you know, where all their offices are that are in one of the end zones overlooking the three fields. In the other side, they've got the indoor practice facility, their field. And then down a little bit, they actually have dorm rooms. They have four buildings where right now all the players are living. So literally they walk out their door and they're on the practice field. And,
wow,
you know, that is nice.
That's cool.
Really nice. Yeah. You know, the downside is obviously they don't play the games there like the Patriots do. So, you know, they're about an hour away from the actual stadium. But this having a nice facility like that, you know, year-round, I think is really cool. You know, the Broncos have a lot of teams. In fact, most teams have it the way the Falcons do because – they don't own the stadiums like the Patriots, so they can't set up all their practices right there.
Right.
But so most teams have a facility off as the year-round place.
Good Lord, stop pushing the button.
Yeah, that button needs to be stopped.
But Matt Ryan obviously is impressive. Who else stood out to you from the Falcons? You know, looked great, looked smooth, really surprised you with talent, ability, what have you.
Who's that, Ryan?
No, who else,
no, who else
Falcons,
other than
beyond
Ryan
stood out?
Any other players, or do you not know any of the other players? Roddy White.
How big were Michael Turner's thighs? Was he out there?
I like, you know, he's been on the team for a while, you know, the wide receiver Finneran that they have.
Oh, you got to be kidding me.
You're picking a white stiff?
Paul, he makes plays. He's a good player.
He's a stiff.
Well, he looked good today, and that fullback that caught the pass over the middle, you know, for a big bulky guy, he had some quickness and could get up in the air with good hands. So, you know, he looks like he could be a good player for them.
Okay, clearly you're not capable of analyzing opposing teams, so let's break down something you are capable of.
I can only
of.
Watch so much in an hour.
Yeah, and you fixated on a white stiff for some reason instead of...
And a fullback.
Yeah, and a fullback.
I looked at guys that made plays.
Oh, God. What's the hotel like? How is the white trash resort, as you described it?
Oh, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine. The lake here is huge. It's a man-made lake, but, you know, from the marina, we didn't see the whole lake. It must be huge because there's like 2,000 boats at this marina.
What lake is it?
Lake Lanier.
Oh.
So,
you're going to go boating with Eric later on a sailboat?
It must be the off-season, though, because no one's around. No one is on the golf course. It seems like it's deserted.
Oh, so you and Eric can have a romantic sailboat ride together tonight.
I thought we were...
Excuse me?
I thought we were talking football here.
I wanted to until you started talking.
Until you brought up Brian Finneran in the Villanova alumni game. I mean, please.
Paul, just because you don't like him, I got to tell you what I saw. I mean, I saw him make plays.
Okay.
What am I supposed to do, make things up?
Well, obviously you saw an offensive guard from the early 90s out there all day. Who knows what you really saw?
All right.
All right.
Don't ask the question if
okay,
you don't want to know the answer.
How about John Abraham? Was he on the field? He's a pass rusher. How did he do?
You know, pass rusher. You can't. Burgess was out there. And I was mostly watching, you know, the Patriots defense because the fields were split. So Eric took the offense. I took the offense with the ones.
All right. My apologies for that whole debacle. Right there. That's our fault.
It is.
Because Eric was more than willing to call in with information.
I let that go on too long, too.
We chose Fred. So that's our fault. We'll take the hit on that one.
Brian Finneran and Olavi Mugaheli, whatever the hell his name
is. Hey, Junior, let's take a quick break. We'll reset and get back to you in a moment.
When the boss says it.
For those that want Patriot Talk when other talk radio stations are talking other stuff, go to patriots.com and listen to PFW in Progress.
You have to do it. PFW in Progress on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. Says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay. Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Patriot Place in Foxborough is New England's premier entertainment, dining, and shopping destination. Experience the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, an interactive museum dedicated to the history of New England football. The family will want to check out the latest summer movie at Showcase Cinema Deluxe, or a concert or comedy show at Showcase Live, shop retailers, and the region's only Bass Pro Shops. And of course, there's always dinner and drinks as you dine outdoors overlooking Gillette Stadium. Experience world-class medical care at Brigham and Women's Mass General Healthcare Center, located on-site at Patriot Place. The region's only four-star hotel, the Renaissance Hotel and Spa, offers luxurious accommodations, including the ultimate in pampering at Spa Epoche. Special events are always happening at Patriot Place, from Rock the Plaza every Saturday and Sunday, to the Kids Club Storytime every Tuesday, to the area's largest classic car display. Patriot Place is located in Foxborough next to Gillette Stadium, and parking is free. Visit patriot-place.com for complete store and restaurant hours and event listings. Patriot Place. Shop. Dine. Enjoy.
Tuesday's edition of PFW in Progress featured Fred flying solo. Well, Philo is there.
I'm not the brightest guy in the world.
Everything seemed to be going well until this topic came up.
If anyone has used the contraption called the Nut Wizard, I think you can find that at nutwizard.com. It's not what you think. It's for picking up, like, acorns in your yard. I have a ton of acorns, so I'm looking for the best way to pick up acorns in my yard without breaking my back, you know? So I saw this thing. It's like a cage with spokes, and you roll it, and supposedly it just picks up the acorns. But I want to, before I decide, $49. I want to buy it, you know, if it only works half the time or whatever. Or if someone has a better way to pick up acorns.
Now, back to the Nut Wizard. I mean, Fred, and hopefully the rest of the PFW boys.
We will rejoin the Nut Wizard and Eric on Thursday. Andy and I will be heading down, to Atlanta for the game.
Maybe.
Yeah, you know, provided that our flight's on time and all, you know. But I don't know how we're going to top Eugene Chung and company based on all that.
It's going to be tough.
I want to get back to the emails because they're starting to pile up a little bit as we spent quite a bit of time on phone calls in the first hour, Andy. So, again, webradio at patriots.com.
Talk to three idiots.
Yeah, Carl.
Kevin, Brad, and Fred.
Carl has a quick question for you. It's fourth and two again. I think you understand where he's going. All things being equal, fourth and two this year against the Colts. You're the head coach. Do you send the defense or the offense out? And if you send the offense out, what combination of receivers, tight ends, and running backs do you send?
Well, I send the punt team out.
Yeah, I play defense. I think it was the wrong decision. Not because of personnel. It was the wrong decision because it made it awfully difficult on your team.
Personnel-wise, if I go for it, tell you who I'm looking for. You're going to laugh at me. But I'm being somewhat serious.
Julian Edelman?
No.
Oh.
Rob Gronkowski. If I need to make a play in traffic, I'll take my big-bodied 6'6 tight end who's shown soft hands. Now, maybe I'll feel differently as the season goes on, but to me, that's great. I mean, if you can add that as a legitimate option, now they have to cover Moss, they have to cover Welker, and they have to cover Falk, because those are your, over the last 4 years, those are your legitimate options on that play. Well, now I have Gronkowski to go to. I don't feel as great about Hernandez yet because he hasn't proven to me that he's quite as sure-handed, quite as accurate. I just think that's tailor-made for, they can't cover everybody, and the new tight end is a target that I'd look for, right?
He has certainly made a lot of catches in
2 yards,
tight traffic.
And that catch he made against the Saints where he got leveled and the ball pobbled a little bit and he still caught it? I mean,
yeah, he's made a lot of catches like that in training camp where there's guys all over him.
Right.
Like Coach used to make.
He can beat a linebacker or a safety in that situation.
And even if he's not open, there's still a good chance that he might make the catch. Again,
it might be like Falk. It's going to be a bang-bang play. They're going to be jumping everything.
Andy and I agree. However, I think they should punt.
Well, they should. If they're punting
at
an NFL
skippy.
Level.
Mike
still
is next
up. Still
have
my doubts about the punter.
Mike is next up. He wants to know, what's up, A-Team? We are here. That is true. Although not a very A-Team-like performance so far.
Well, without a third voice, I can't make fun of anything.
What's the deal with Sergio Brown? I hadn't heard much of him, but he was all over the ball like white on rice during Thursday night's game. He looked really good. How much of a shot does he have of making the team, especially with Bodden out and Butler being there but not able to make the plays?
Zero.
I think he's a long shot to make the team, but I do agree. I think he has been one of those undrafted free agents who has shown up in practice. Didn't know anything about him. Number 38 tends to flash. I don't think he's going to make the team. I think safety's a pretty deep spot.
Practice squad.
I think
special
he's definitely
teamer, practice squad.
He's definitely a candidate for the practice squad, and maybe if he wanted to, you know, if he continues to make plays and he's just, you know, too hard to get rid of. Maybe that opens the door for a deal somewhere in the secondary with somebody, you know, a McGowan.
Better be McGowan you're talking about.
Or Sanders. Random
I was actually worried about that today when he said he's not out there. Who knows? I don't know what's going on in the league.
But you have to take it all with a grain of salt because the attendance was taken by Eric alone. And
he's an idiot.
That's questionable because...
And he's always wrong. He always has a mistake despite telling us he never makes mistakes.
But that's true. Random observation. Belichick seems to be more forthcoming with details lately.
A little bit.
Especially with regard to injuries. Have you guys noticed the change in how he's disseminating information these days?
He's been a little bit more forthcoming. I agree.
Think the one glaring example is the one that we talked about last week, that he offered up the Warren and Kazier updates, that they were going to be further medically evaluated.
That.
And beyond that, I think it's, you know, I look forward to that injury list thing. I don't think it's career threatening. That's kind of the little quips and barbs
I don't think you'll get it from the quarterback.
He generally
but
has.
I thought even today
to
that
Torrey
Holt won't be here. I think sometimes he'll say, we'll see how that goes. You know,
yeah,
he knows he's not
going
to be here. No, I know, but he's saying definitively he's not going to be a part of this team, blah, blah, blah. I think sometimes he goes, we'll see how that goes, even though he knows the answer.
There have been some examples.
Another stupid one, Wes Welker, guy's coming back from an ACL. I think he rarely says specific injuries, even when it's everyone on the earth knows exactly what it was.
The last 20% is the hardest to get back.
Stuff like that, I think, has been a little...
I agree. There has
revealing.
Been a little bit more of information than he normally gives. Lastly, there's something fishy about the Holt situation. First, he wasn't being used much in training camp and seemed to be getting frustrated. Then he is sidelined in sweats. Then he's placed on IR with a mysterious knee injury. Did you guys even see how that happened?
Nope.
And then I read a report yesterday by Reese, I believe, that Bill doesn't want Holt around the team anymore. With all the up-and-coming talent in the wide receiver core, are they just straight-up dumping him? Thanks, guys. P.S., this 2010 Patriots team is starting to look scary good. It's still way premature, but they could very well be better than the 07 team.
I just don't see it.
You know, an otherwise solid email, I think, marred by...
late idiocy?
Yeah. I don't know what you've seen to put this team in the scary good category.
Well, I mean, if you're falling in love with offensive weapons, maybe.
Okay, let's talk about the offensive weapons, and let's talk about what we saw on Thursday night. Because, and you know this from sitting next to me in the press box that night, I was very impressed with the overall play of the Patriots against New Orleans. I thought, especially defensively, they played very well, ones against ones. The Patriots ones had two series in that game, did they not?
Sure.
They did. They had the ball for two series. The first one was a 3-and-out. Second one was outstanding. They went 93 yards for a touchdown. That's scary good. They went 3-and-out and then went and scored a touchdown. I mean, were the Jets scary good last night? They threw a pick on their first possession and then went the length of the field for a touchdown on their second. I mean, I want to put the brakes on the scary good stuff with all the new weapons. I think there is potential to have different options and options that they sorely lacked last year. But again, I don't think offense was the main problem last year. They could have won games had they done more offensively, yes. If they don't shore up the defense, they're not going to be much better than they were. And that's how I felt about it. And that's why I was most excited Thursday night about the defense coming out with 2-3 and outs to open the game. That, to me, was more exciting than anything that happened on offense. I don't know how you felt about it.
Sure, Paul. I don't think this team is scary good. I think what's the record most associated with me?
You, 6-10 for you.
But it's not accurate, but.
Yeah, I've been saying 10-6 pretty much from the start. I like some of the things that I've seen. I think they've had a good camp. I do. I'm very encouraged by what I've seen. But I don't necessarily think. And by the way, I didn't read anywhere where Belichick didn't want Torrey Holt around. Now, he was asked about that today.
He won't be.
And said he won't be, but I didn't necessarily, I mean, I didn't hear tone.
It's so ridiculous.
I didn't get an, I don't know that there's anything to that. I do agree that there's a little bit of mystery involved in the situation. I agree with Mike on that regard. He is having surgery, but I'm not sure how or when that injury was sustained, and I think he was going to get cut. I don't think he was going to be part of the team either way.
Certainly possibility.
Jared is in Swampscott. Hey, Paul and Andy, last week Mike Reese posted a roster projection that left off Tyrone McKenzie, and it really caught me by surprise. I hadn't read or heard anything from you guys that he was struggling, only that Spikes was excelling. I wasn't able to see much of the Saints game, and I know he played mostly in the second half, but was he really so bad? I expected him to make the team whether or not Guyton fully recovered in the next couple of weeks. Also, when's the new PFW TV show starting up? Chris Collins is out, which is an improvement. But now you all will be in HD.
Which is not an improvement.
That could go from zero to ugly pretty quickly. Just kidding, guys, and Eric. Where to start here? Tyrone McKenzie. I think we talked about this a little bit with Kevin, I want to say, on the phone.
Sure.
I thought you put that perfectly. I would be stunned if he gets cut because he's a third-round pick, basically a rookie third-round pick. He has shown the ability to be that kind of early down inside linebacking type player where he can fill the gaps, take on guards, stuff the run. I think the word you used was stiff upper body, I think, Andy. I would agree with that. I don't anticipate seeing him sideline to sideline making plays in the passing game a la Patrick Willis or any of those guys. I don't think that's his skill set. But for them to pull the plug on a guy who really has yet to play, I would be surprised with that. I'd be very surprised with that. Now, I don't think he's been bad in camp. I just think Spikes has been markedly better.
And gotten a lot more reps.
Yeah.
Because even in the preseason game, he started next to Mayo, and then he stayed out there with sort of the second unit. And I do think part of that may have been how they're playing. And I'm not sure McKenzie might be next in line, but I think they went with Dane Fletcher as the next in the group because I think maybe he's more of a weak side guy and Spikes was playing the strong side. I think
they wanted to have Spikes do a lot of the different stuff too. Yeah. I don't know how you felt, but
no. My point is Spikes was going to stay out either way. But I personally believe McKenzie's next in line. But I think he would have manned the Mike position, the strong side linebacker, whereas Fletcher is a weak side guy, so he goes out there when Spikes stays in.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And the PFW show will begin at the start of the season, so
before the
I would say it'll air the first one. My guess would be on the Thursday night, the 9th.
Right before the preseason.
I think that's right.
I think that will be probably around the time frame, which would be great.
Sure.
Because that'll be your perfect way. The NFL kickoff will be later that night, so you watch us on Comcast Sportsnet, New England, and you get yourself all primed and ready for the opener. What's that? What's the opener? New Orleans and Minnesota. I think it's Minnesota at New Orleans. John is from Spencer. You're supposed to say, where's Spencer?
It's in Western Mass, isn't it?
Central, I think.
But Central. You know,
same.
Is that anywhere near Gardner?
Yeah, I think it is. Not positive on
that. Now we make furniture?
It all depends on how you look at the map.
World's biggest chair?
Gardner mattress?
I think they have the world's biggest chair there.
Why are you distracting me? I have a hard enough time reading.
Sorry.
thanks for sticking around for us while the other two are down in Georgia.
Well, you know, we were willing to take one for the team.
I share your concerns with the defensive line, but what have we learned about the offensive line? I have concerns about the defensive line.
Oh, you're in love.
The last preseason match might not tell us enough, but the line seemed a little more stout than I had imagined, given the loss of Mankins and Kazier. I know goal line situations were also a problem in practice, but that three tight end set looked pretty impressive on Green Ellis's touchdown run. So, is there hope for the offensive line? Is there anything we can look for on Thursday, given that Atlanta does not seem to have a terribly strong interior D? It's a good point about Atlanta. They're very small, light, and able to be run on defensive front.
No question.
As Fred Taylor did last year.
We could look for another, and it may be Fred Taylor and Sammy Morris as we kind of look at the
ref. There was no foul on the play. It was not a hold. The defender was just overpowered.
Maybe they will overpower, and I know people were excited about Dan Conley's block on the touchdown. I thought Rob Gronkowski made a nice block on the touchdown.
Sure you did.
At another, well, he did. It's just the facts. They are undisputed or indisputed, whatever. I also thought he had a nice block earlier where he had great initial contact and then learned that in the NFL, you know, you have to keep your block and maintain it and didn't do that. But he was going up against, it looked like a defensive tackle. And I think if you get a tight end that can legitimately block defensive tackles and move defensive tackles out of the way, that will significantly help you in any other failings you have. If your center, as we say, is too small or your guards aren't great, that'll be a benefit to this offense. Rob Gronkowski's blocking.
Now, I was reading the call screener when you went started on your little diatribe on your boy Gronkowski, but did you mention the time that he went in motion and banged into the quarterback on the way back?
No, I didn't see that.
You left
that
one out on the goal line? Okay. Just was wondering.
You know, sometimes when you're a physical presence and you're moving people, there's collateral damage.
I have been on record from the start saying he is the best tight end on the roster, and he is the most complete tight end.
I don't think there's any question about it.
Without question on the roster. We're going to move back to the phones, Andy, because our good pal Anthony in Naples is on the phone. Anthony!
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How are you, my man?
You Portuguese guy, right? Portuguese?
Very good.
Can I say
Portuguese?
Is Portuguese offensive?
No, I don't take offense to it.
Oh, okay, you Portuguese.
Yeah.
It must be Italian.
That's no big deal.
Okay, good. Portuguese
we
shower?
We make fun of everybody, so we can take it if somebody makes fun of us.
That's right, you dumb Portuguese. How far
hey,
can I go here?
Probably can't go that far.
Now you're just calling me dumb. That's not even right.
Oh, that's a good point. What do you got today?
What I have today is that, actually, I was listening to you guys live. I do have a beef with the live feed. For some reason, when I pause it, it doesn't pause. It comes back to wherever you guys are. So maybe the Ferreira up there could try to fix that. I don't know. But
not surprisingly, you're getting the dumbfounded look from the producer, who is deflecting.
I don't think he's
deflecting all responsibility.
I don't know.
Well, I think it's not the producer's fault. It's whoever set up the app.
Right. I'm going to blame the producer.
Let's blame Ferreira.
That's who I
think
he was, right?
I think he's one of your Portuguese brethren.
He is.
Well, my last name is Ferreira, so he must be related somehow.
Yeah. Mixed blood.
The reason why I was calling, actually, it's funny that you guys were talking about, I was listening to you live about the whole McKenzie thing. And this really doesn't mean much, but I honestly, when I sat there and I looked at his number 44, I don't know. To me, that just gave me a feeling like he might get cut.
Wait, that's not fair. He was 53, and then they ripped it off his back while he was on IR and out of sight, out of mind when Burgess came last year.
Yeah, and I don't want to characterize him as a complete and total roster lock.
No,
either.
But he was given 44 when he wasn't really even part of the team, the organization. He was on IR as a rookie, out of sight, out of mind, kind of.
Yeah.
I guess there's no other number available in the 50s?
Well,
to me,
not right
bad.
Now, but
I don't know,
will be.
It's silly. I know I'm being silly, but it just when I saw that 44 on him, I said, "Uh-oh, that's not a good sign." I don't know what it was. It's just I've never seen somebody who's impactful with those type of numbers, I guess.
And there's not there really isn't a number available. Right.
I mean, just
52. I mean, 50, 51, 52. It's retired, yeah, I believe.
But
Steve
like,
Nelson,
but
right?
Like, right. 56 and 57 are retired,
and
but
54 is
right now is probably
out of rotation.
They probably want to put it out of rotation at least initially. 52 is Eric Alexander. There's a number that easily could be available.
I kind of like 44.
58.
Can he not play
easily
with 44?
No, he could. Tully Bantakame was 48.
I like 44.
You know, Tully Bantakame was 48 for
Mark
a couple
Edwards,
of years.
Mark Edwards, 44. Maybe?
The man makes the number. The number does not make the man, Anthony. You should know that.
I said it was silly.
It is silly. So move on, you dumb.
Wow.
It was just one of those things that just, like, hits you. You're like, oh, man, that's not a good sign.
Well, I got a question for you based on uniform numbers. I stumped Paul Perillo with this yesterday. Who was the last player you remember, or is it even legal for a position player like a receiver to wear number one?
Who was the last one to do it?
All we can think of is kickers that have worn number one.
I think it's legal. I can't recall a guy wearing number one.
I don't think it's legal, because I think one of these egomaniacs that comes into the league would have done it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Andy. I don't think it's
I think
there.
They changed that rule a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think one of these egomaniacs, Dez Bryant, some punk receiver, maybe, would have said, I want number one.
Oh, wait a minute. Warren Moon was number one.
Good point, Paul.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think that was grandfathered in. I'm going down with it's not legal for receivers right now.
It may not be for receivers. I'm just saying it's legal for a position player is all I'm saying. Maybe the receivers have to be
quarterbacks
in the teams.
Can do it.
And Stanback was given an exception because he was also a quarterback.
Right.
Because Stanback was number nine.
Remember Reggie Bush wanted five, but obviously he couldn't get it.
Well, running backs we know are not allowed to do it, yeah.
Okay, move on. What was your next point?
My next point is everybody just calm down. First preseason game. Yes, the offense looked good. I thought it was funny how you guys talked about how they had a hard time getting in the end zone, and obviously that run with Green Ellis. Brady was ecstatic. Mm-hmm. And you could just see that was the frustration probably through camp as in, like, you know, how many times they got stopped. That's what I kind of took out of it. One thing is, did you guys touch on, do you really think it means anything that Ellis started the game and Maroney came in second place?
Well, we've talked about Bill wanting to get guys a string of carries and not just dividing them all out, three carries here for each guy. I am of the belief that Bill knows what the other guys are, and the Green Ellis carries with the first offensive line against a first defense is to see, do I legitimately want to consider keeping this guy around? Is he an NFL running back or not?
Yeah.
I don't think he is. But.
And I think you're going to see a different guy Thursday night get the start and get 10 or 12 carries. I think it's going to be Fred Taylor, and if that is the case, Andy and I also talked about this, it might make sense that if you are weighing that last roster spot, Fred Taylor and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis might be the two guys that you're sort of, do I keep four, do I keep five? One of these guys might have to go, and I'm going to give those two guys the first shot with the ones against the ones.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's speculation. I don't know for sure if that's what's going on.
I thought his pass blocking was pretty decent. I've watched the game maybe about two to three times, you know, off and on, like especially the first series. I thought he did all right, and I get what you're saying, Andy. You're like, oh, he's not impressive, whatever, but I don't know. To me, is he's just steadier, and I think
we're talking about who are we talking about?
Green Ellis.
Green Ellis.
He's steadier than who?
To me, he's steadier than Maroney.
As a running back?
Yeah, I think so. Listen, I know what you're going to throw out. You're going to throw out those numbers, 4 point, whatever.
Well, I'm just wondering. Yeah,
I won't be throwing out 4 point whatever until he gets there.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to throw out any numbers. Andy had all the numbers that
I got into a fight with a guy on the blog yesterday, basically.
I'm just wondering what we're basing it on. What have we seen from Ben Jarvis Green Ellis to show that he's steady? He's played basically one stretch of games in his 2 years here. And that was in 08. I don't know. We fall in love with guys that don't play. It's like the Patriots are always going to win.
Did I say I was in love?
Well, you said he was steadier. I mean,
but that's not saying I love the guy.
He's never played.
But from what I remember, okay.
And I am no Maroney fan, by the way.
Yeah, but my point is, all right, it's one of those things. Have you guys ever done this where you had one girlfriend and you had another girlfriend and you wish you could take characteristics of that girlfriend and smash it into the other girlfriend?
No, I just keep them both.
But you know what I mean. That's what's annoying with Lawrence Maroney. I just wish that he would make one decision, stick with it, and quit with the freaking dancing. I was actually about to throw an F-bomb. I caught myself. Well, I was like getting a little excited here. But
I hear you,
and I am not. Problem.
I don't mean to make it sound like I'm being hypocritical because I am not the biggest Lawrence Maroney guy. I just feel like Lawrence Maroney is. I think he's a much more suitable NFL lead back than Ben Jarvis Green Ellis ever will be.
And if he were the undrafted player, people would love him. But he's the first round pick.
I think there's a big part of that.
Yes, it does.
You like the underdog guy? Yeah, he's the cute.
I think it's a big part of it.
Yes, you are.
No, I'm not. Especially with the Edelman thing.
It doesn't make you a homer.
I hate how they're putting him into the Hall of Fame, Julian Edelman. Yeah, he's had a nice couple of catches. Yeah, he's all right. But it's like all of a sudden you're in New England and you're white It's just like you get a couple of
right.
catches, they love you.
All right, let's sort of leave the race aspect out of it here.
I know that has something to do with it. I'm sorry.
Anthony, I'm just saying, you know, as radio talk show hosts, Andy and I are going to steer clear of any racial implications. If that's how you feel about it.
But you don't think the comparison of the disappointment of Maroney as the 21st pick in the draft and the surprise of an undrafted player plays into your little comparison?
It's the hardworking guy who never had anything, right, and had to work for his roster spot, and people want him, and they proceed. I mean, the last call is said that they thought that Ben Jarvis Green Ellis ran harder than Maroney. Really?
You know what
you
I
really
mean
think that
saying?
Maroney doesn't run hard, or he doesn't run effectively? Because I think he doesn't run effectively. I think he's trying.
Yeah.
I think
that's
he's trying. He's running hard. He's not.
But, no.
He doesn't take dives.
My point is, all right, what's frustrating with him is just like, it feels like they go away from the running game because you give it to Maroney, he either gets a 1 yard loss or he dances and he stays in the same spot. My point is with Ellis, with Green Ellis, is that when you give him the ball, he'll get those 2 to 3 yards, and that second down gets a little bit easier. And then if you give it to him again, he'll get another 2 to 3 yards. And
that's what you want, is 2 to 3 yards?
See, I don't want that.
I think Maroney's more than capable of getting 2 to 3 yards.
I would rather have the honest to God. I mean, if you're going to ask me to pick between the guy who gets 2 or 3 yards every play or the guy who gets 10 one play and none the next,
right,
I'll take the 10 one play.
Barry Sanders made a pretty good
career
out of this.
Exactly.
But it makes it easier for somebody like Brady to pick up 5 yards.
Listen. Second and 8 is not any easier than second and 10. It's not. If they're not getting 4 yards, it's not an effective running play unless it's a short yardage play. It's not. They're going to be throwing the ball in the next play regardless. Second and 8 is not any more. If it's second and 13, okay. There's a difference there. And you would be right by saying Maroney at times dances a little bit too much and he gets caught in the backfield where maybe Ben Jarvis doesn't do that. But
the comparison is irrelevant because Maroney's on the roster. He's not. It's not a roster spot battle between Maroney and Green Ellis, in my opinion. I'd be stunned if it were. To me, it's Taylor. It's the back end of the committee because I think Falk, Morris, and Maroney are part of the committee. Now the question is, does the committee go 4 deep or 5? And if it's 4, is your 4th Taylor or Green Ellis? I would go Taylor.
All right, Anthony, let us. We got a bunch of emails here. I feel like for a lot of emails. I got to get move on, but I do appreciate the call. I will respectfully disagree with regard to Benny, who I like, by the way.
Anthony, you're all hot and bothered. Go get your right guard and take a shower.
In terms of talent and effectiveness, I think Maroney is the better option.
We have breaking news, men, too, here on the Four Letter Network is reporting that a number of Minnesota Vikings players have traveled to Brett Favre's house in Mississippi.
Oh, my God.
What a shameless network.
What a shameless team.
Ken in New Mexico is weighing in, by the way.
Just because Brad Childress has to whore himself out, now the players have to whore themselves out?
I've always wanted to be a Packer.
Yeah, right?
I mean, that's ridiculous.
I always will be a Packer.
Ken just chiming in real quick to say, I'd like to reiterate, PFW in Progress is better without Fred. And that phone call just proved it. And, yeah, I have to get another email in because the caller was right. I'll never have one read by Fred again.
It's true. But Eric will read them. Paul will read them.
Oh, I'll read them. But this might be the last time I'm ever in this seat.
Why are the Vikings in Mississippi?
I don't know.
No, they went to go see.
No, I know. Aren't they in camp? Don't they have preseason games coming up? What are they doing in Mississippi?
I don't know. It says that they traveled to Mississippi to meet with the quarterback.
Are they playing the Saints? No, they're not. They wouldn't be playing the Saints preseason.
That's stupid.
Warren, next up. During training camp, I've read a couple of times that Brady has been showing a lot of anger when things haven't been going right. Throwing his helmet, kicking
balls,
the football, death stares, and not showing any sign of laughter when Wilfork high-stepped to the end zone when he almost picked him off. Is this a normal thing throughout the years, or has it been worse this season? What are your thoughts on that, Andy?
I think it's pretty normal, but I think it has been worse. I think he's been a little bit more frustrated.
I agree.
I think he is a very competitive guy, and when he is in the heat of the moment, I don't think he sees a lot of humor and stuff if he's on the wrong end of it. On the flip side, by the way, I think he celebrates when he is successful at the cost of the defense. I've seen him celebrate and give the defense a hard time. But I think it's normal. As I've said in the past and will continue to say, he's one of the more competitive people on the planet. I truly believe that he, when he's between the lines, it's business time.
It's one of the things that I respect the most about him is how seriously he takes these drills in camp every single practice. I've never seen him take a drill off. Never. And it is one of the things I respect the most about him. Marcus has some grades
he wants to throw out here from the first preseason game. He rewatched the Patriots-Saints game on NFL Network. Initial thoughts are that the Pats look pretty good as a whole. Both offense and defense showed promise. My individual player grades are as follows. What's the matter with him in there? What's his
I think deal? We have another call getting ready to. It'll pop up on your little Google.
Let me know if you agree or disagree. We don't need to talk to him. By the way, players such as Brady, Moss, Wilfork, and Mayo all look great as expected, so no need to discuss. Edelman, A++. He looked freaking great. Very excited about his punt return capabilities. McCourty, A+. The rookie looked really good. His kick return instincts are very good, and his cover ability seemed at a pro level. Spikes, A, was flying all over the field. Solid tackler. Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Maroney, A.
Wow.
Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis looked fast and decisive running the rock. Is he really competing for a starting job?
Yes, because on this team, if you can average 3.8 a carry, you can start. Was it 3.8?
When he averages 3.8 a carry, let me know. Maroney is a TD machine under 7 yards. Offense and defensive lines get Bs. I was very encouraged. Chung, Bs, look great in coverage. Will Hyten, Wheatley, Bs, both look decent in coverage. Wheatley was bringing the stick and played really well on special teams. Will Hyten looked confident covering receivers and seems like he could play really well in sub packages. It's funny, the only play I remember from Will Hyten was when he got beat by 12 yards and dove and had the ball deflect off the back of his hand.
Oh, he pulled the tie pool. I do recall
looking.
That.
That's the only play I remember from Will Hyten in the whole game. But again, I want to reiterate, I seem to be in the minority about Jonathan Will Hyten. Everybody else seems to think a lot more of him. Brown, B. Who the hell is Sergio Brown? He was flying all over the field on special teams, made a big stick and to cause the game-clinching interception. Tight ends, B. They all look good in their respective duties. Gronk and Crump block great. Hernandez looked smooth, fast, and caught the ball pretty well. Didn't he drop one?
According to the NFL stats, I believe he was 50% target to catch.
Yeah,
Butler,
he dropped one.
Butler, C-, didn't show me much. He needs to improve. Robinson, F. Guess we'll have two quarterbacks again this year.
Or maybe one.
Let's see. Now, do we have to go to the phone?
No.
In all seriousness?
That's up to you guys.
Is he listening?
He is on hold right now. Listen.
So the tool can hear us?
All right.
Is he in his shed?
Let's go to the phones. Let's bring the show to a screeching halt. Eric?
Yes, Paul?
What are you doing?
Besides screwing up the damn blog.
Any signs of James Sanders, you idiot?
Jesus, you gave me a scare. I thought it was the big one.
I know. I was concerned about your health, Andy, when I found out that I couldn't go back and update my blog for you. Because
stop telling lies. You are an habitual liar.
Yes, Eric, when it comes to attendance, you are an habitual liar.
No, that's not true. So what did Fred tell you? What did Fred tell you?
Absolutely nothing other
not
than
much.
Brian Finneran was impressive.
Other than Brian Finneran,
I asked
impressive?
Him for somebody beyond Matt Ryan who stood out, you know, talent wise. First time getting an up close look at the Falcons, and he went with Brian Finneran and the.
You know why? You know why he said Brian Finneran? Because at one.
Yes,
point,
I do know why, but I'm not going to say it on the
same
air.
Reason.
No,
Anthony
but...
thinks Julian Edelman's popular.
No, we were the where they had us. We were standing in between practice fields, actually on the field, and at one point Fred turns around and he sees Finneran make a catch right in front of us, like 2 feet in front of us. And he looks at me and he goes, "Hey, Brian Finneran." I go, "Yeah, I know who he is." And he's like, "Oh, that was a nice catch."
Okay, that's so, good to know. It was based on a single moment right in front of him.
Yeah.
So okay, so give us the information of the day. What you saw, apparently you were watching the Patriots offense more and taking on the Falcons defense.
Yeah, Fred. I asked Fred to keep an eye on one field, the field where the Falcons defense was mostly. So I watched the offense. And
he got a good look at Eugene Chung.
Yeah, he wrote about Eugene Chung a lot.
I saw some of the comments on the blog. Typical Fred.
Oh, yeah.
What are you going to do?
Make fun of him. What do you mean? What are we going to do?
Yeah, that's what you've been doing, I would assume, for the past hour and 45 minutes. So.
And you as well. I mean, for saying James Sanders wasn't there when he was there.
He had a hard time handling his cell phone, too, Eric.
Yeah, his fat cheek kept hitting buttons, so he was beeping every couple comments.
So it was like that Magic Jack phone call we used to get
yeah,
where the guy was
it wasn't
all the
so
time.
Magic.
Jack.
No.
Funny because he's fat. So what do you got for us, Eric?
Well, it was kind of interesting because you remember last week when the Saints came, they were in full pads for the morning and the afternoon on that Tuesday.
Word.
Here, they were in shells. So it seemed like it was sort of a more of a subdued type of practice. It didn't really seem like it had that sort of the fire that we saw last week. But when I asked Brady about that afterwards and even Mike Smith, they both said that they felt it was kind of an up-tempo practice, which I thought was a little bizarre. I mean, you know, Brady's argument wasn't too strong that it was an up-tempo practice, but, you know, when you're in shells, you can't really do as much as you normally would anyway. So, but it was definitely pass-oriented, the focus, and it was damp. There were a lot of underthrown passes, a lot of short hops, a lot of receivers dropping the ball on both sides. So conditions played a little bit of a factor early on. But overall, I didn't feel like that same. Let me put it this way: I don't think Bill's going to come out tomorrow and say this was one of the most productive practices he's ever been a part of, like he did last week. Right. I'd be surprised if he said that anyway.
It sounds like it was more along the lines of what the Giants did here way back in 2001 at Bryant's.
Right.
You know,
that's probably a little bit more of an accurate description. Yeah.
But that was a long time ago.
What else you got? Who stood out for you?
Were there guys on Atlanta that, you know, kind of wowed you?
I'm looking for the Moss thing, where people coming, and we've done it with, wow, he's the best player on the field. You see him up close and personal and how easy he makes it look. Who wowed you?
There weren't really a lot of those, but I think part of that was the fact that it wasn't one of those all-out type of practices. I mean, we're used to seeing Moss making those ridiculous catches and Brady making those great throws, so and we saw a few more of that today. Even Mike Smith said he was impressed with Moss's. There was a one-handed catch that Moss had in 7-on-7 work, which was just insane. Brian Williams had him by the arm, by the left arm, and Moss just stuck out his right paw, and the ball fell right into his palm, and he cradled it. Perfect pass. So, like, that kind of stuff, I wasn't seeing that kind of stuff from anyone on the Falcons. I mean, Matt Ryan was impressive running his offense. But I didn't really see too many of those type of athletes on that side of the field.
How about Curtis Lofton? Was he out there? Does he run around?
The linebacker?
Yeah.
Is he a big,
mean-looking mother bleeper?
If he was out there making any sort of plays, it wasn't really noticeable. Didn't really stand out in any way.
So he's the Gerard Mayo of their defense?
Kind of.
Okay.
There was one kind of funny incident. Well, I don't know if we're allowed to talk about what people actually say on the field, so I probably shouldn't say that.
If it was a Patriot, you can't say what he said.
Somebody's got to these guys.
No, it was someone on the Falcons reacting to something that Mayo said.
Okay, well, you can't tell us what Mayo said, but you can tell us the Falcon reaction.
Well, I can't because he was sort of making fun of Mayo for something that he said.
Okay, well, you're only quoting him, not Mayo, so quote him. Go.
Girls only want boyfriends who have great skills.
He's like he was just saying that Mayo's the kind of guy that would complain about everything.
Oh, did he call him a bitch?
Which was kind of. He wasn't really complaining. He was just sort of joking around with one of his teammates about something in particular that had just happened. And the guy, I think, either took it the wrong way or maybe has a history with him or something. But it was just a little bizarre.
Okay.
A little bizarre interlude in between the practice field.
So what do you got now before you call it a day?
It's going to be a while before we call it a day. I got to put
something
out.
I'm working hard.
Listen.
Get the weight of the world on my shoulders.
Thank you. All I wanted to know was what he was going to be doing for the next hour or so. I didn't really need to know how hard he had it in life. All right. We got 10 minutes here. We're going to rifle through some emails, okay?
What are you, Fred?
It's 1:51 on the computer.
Says it's quarter up on this.
Hey, I'd be happy to stay here another hour if you want.
Mine says 1:47, so we have three different times here.
Okay.
Let's go long.
Zach is a big Patriots
fan. That's what she said.
Hey, guys, and Eric, no, screw you. Preemptive strike.
Well, Eric, we blew him up, otherwise he would have heard it.
I'm 18 and have been a Pats fan since the end of the 06 season after being trapped in my house because of an ice storm. Watching the 07 season was the best year of my life.
Remember that ice storm.
Until the Super Bowl, which was the worst day of my life. However, I did not jump off the wagon. I am a loyal Pats fan and will be for the rest of my life. I started listening to PFW after the playoff game last year. And I've been listening ever since.
Interesting time.
Fred is my favorite, followed by Andy, Paul, and Kevin. You guys and Eric have the perfect formula, so don't mess with it. I would be glad to buy you guys lunch, so save my email. You get that over
save
there?
Save his email.
Kevin, less is more with regards to the drops. They are a little loud.
Ooh.
And who is this again?
That's Zach.
Zach. He's a young listener.
So he complimented me and then threw me under the bus at the end?
Just get the job done. I don't want to hear it. What do you always say?
I mean, they still
don't
coach
tell
Tom
me
Brady, you know. They like how he plays quarterback, but they coach him each and every day. They critique him. It happens. You need to learn how to take some constructive criticism.
TG is checking in. TG and NJ. Hey there, A-team. Nice reprieve from the pomp and the pompous Fred and Squidward.
I'm pretty sure that's one thing we're not, is pompous.
Got a roster inquiry. Sergio Brown, Thomas Williams. Can we keep them on the roster?
No.
They know how to tackle. Please.
What do you think? Talk about
Thomas
it.
Thomas Williams gets a lot of practice. Literally, practice tackling.
Can we trade Mankins to the Giants for Victor Cruz? Trade Mankins to anybody for anything?
Sure.
I don't know about Victor Cruz. I have to plead ignorant on that one.
I don't know who that is.
I don't know much about Victor Cruz.
What position does he play?
In relation to Julio.
Jose.
Don't know. Great job, guys, with the training camp coverage. Even you, Paulie. Wow, that's high praise from TG.
Sergio Brown, I do not think will make the roster. I think he has shown up. I mean, I think he's gotten reps where I believe he's gotten some reps, in all admission, ahead of James Sanders at various rotations in the secondary.
I think he has flashed mainly because he's an undrafted free agent. Like, I've noticed him.
And why else? Does he benefit from anything?
Oh, well, he has the system down, you know, being
a
Notre Dame guy.
He's got his defensive coordinator as his coach now.
That's what I'm saying. He has the system down, being a
Notre Dame
guy.
The guy who taught him last year is the guy who's teaching him this year. Yeah. I think that's an advantage. That's the old Randall Gay, Eric Alexander.
This year we surmised Brandon Dedrick would be that guy out of Nick Saban.
So those guys get a boost out of coming from similar systems.
Checking in from Denmark, I think it's Trolls. Is that how we pronounce that one?
T-R-O-L-L-S.
T-R-O-E-L-S. I just want to congratulate you, all you patriotic men of PFW. Your country won the world championship in flag football this weekend. The U.S. team handily defeated the Danish team in the final 35-19. It's now three times in a row that we finished second, which is just about as rewarding as going 18-1, I can tell you that. But never mind, it got me to thinking. The Patriots will soon be cutting the roster down, and my team could use some reinforcements going into the playoffs. Is there someone you can recommend as a potentially really good two-way flag football player? Maybe that Sanders guy, Andy.
No, I don't think actually he's not athletic enough to stand out on a flag football field as a two-way player.
Wow, look at you.
I can be objective.
No, you can't.
You know who I think would do a pretty good job potentially in that? Matthew Slater. Great speed. He's been a safety/wide receiver throughout his time here. Not sure about his hands, so that could be an issue. I'd give him a chance as a flag football player.
Chris,
and he might be available.
Chris with a T-I-A-N is next. First off, thank you for blowing up, Fred. 30 seconds to the call, I was waiting for the blow up. What a disaster. Well, football's back, baby, and here are one man's observations. Yes, Andy, I stole this from your blog entries.
Yeah, that's
from preseason game one. Wait a minute. He stole his one man's observations from you?
Yes, I'm like Darrell Revis. I have patented that.
And I stole it from you, too, then. I'm sorry. I have a new man crush. His name is Brandon Spikes. He seems to diagnose plays
very fast.
Whoa,
that's what you stole from me.
And his speed looks fine to me. Maybe that's why his speed looked fine to me. I don't know.
Because he's quick.
The three tight end package was surprising. Devin McCourty looks like he has the potential to impact the return game the way Ellis Hobbs did.
Yep.
Who needs Wes when you have Julian? Just kidding, of course. However, the second-year player is progressing quite nicely. Thank you very much. Just as you guys have been blogging.
Did he practice today?
Edelman?
Yeah.
Oh, Welker.
Edelman.
You went down the list.
But as soon as I saw James Sanders, I lost all, you know.
Okay. I'm not really sold on the Chung Merriweather combo. Don't get me wrong. I love the athletic ability and big hits they both bring. However, I think they both take too many chances. I'm not sold on that tandem either.
I'm not either.
Because I don't think they're big. I think they want to be big
hitters. They
want to
be big hitters.
I don't know if they are. Chung, I'm not blaming him for being bad at it. I haven't seen it yet.
He's not what he is.
Merriweather misses all the big hits.
Merriweather is what he is, pretty much, in my mind. He's kind of reached that point in his career.
And I did like the one play I saw that stood out for me from Chung was on the second series, I believe, Thursday night. It's about a 3rd and 7, and out in his area, came up, made a nice wrap-up tackle about 2 yards short of the first down.
Yeah.
That's what I want out of my safety. Short tackles. I don't need decapitations. I want the tackle before the first down.
What Jimmy used to be.
Merriweather has never done that.
Before he started giving up 50-yard plays on the preseason field as he did last week.
As for the other news, Burgess just didn't want to go through training camp, and that bothers me. I'm not sold on that. Yeah, I think that's a little unfair. I think I need some more information. He says he was dealing with something. I see no reason why we don't take him in.
And
his
Bill
work.
Has alluded to he was dealing with something.
Ty Warren's
loss. I don't think Bill would take part in a charade. Do you? I don't think he would necessarily help a guy put forth something that wasn't true in some charade. I don't. Apparently Paul does, because you're not saying anything.
Ty Warren's loss is a huge blow. Huge. Also, I'm not in the camp that he got hurt because he wasn't there during the offseason. I think it's a dumb argument. I couldn't agree more with that.
Stupid, idiotic argument.
For the defensive line's sake, Ron Brace better be a major contributor this year. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. That gash on Eli's head was gross. I would have passed out if I saw that amount of blood coming from my head.
I probably would have too.
All right.
That was a good random note at the end. All Patriots and then boom.
Jack, next up. Hey, guys, just wondering what you thought about Brandon Tate in his overall development. What do you like, dislike in the first preseason game or in camp? I know it's not much to work with, but just curious on your opinions.
Big playability, Tate, I saw speed, knack for the tough catch.
Yeah.
Raw.
Yeah, that's excellent. I think that
Paul was going to say that, but I said
no,
it.
No, I think that he has ability. There's no doubt about it. And
they all have ability at this level, Paul.
I'm not sure he is going to be the guy that we can rely on for as big a role, I think, as a lot of other people maybe have him penciled in for. Is that accurate?
This year?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm hearing people thinking that, you know, he's balancing the field, and I think he might make some big plays. Let's put it that way.
But if he can do that, it'll help the team. Because big plays help teams.
I think it's going to be all about, for him, his ability to be where he's supposed to be.
Sure.
Running the routes and being what Brady needs him to be.
Sure.
Let's see. Mike is next up. Guys, would have liked you to interview the British Pats fans from last week more. I am especially curious to hear how non-Americans got into football. But, of course, you guys blew it.
Didn't we ask him? The 85 Super Bowl?
You talked to him a fair amount. He was sitting here for like an hour.
Right. Sat here and for we the whole him. Show.
He talked about the 85 Super Bowl, how everybody was rooting for the Bears.
He wasn't the most talkative guy to be.
No.
With, anyway.
No, I think he was just happy to kind of
He was happy to just sit
check out the show. And
he wanted to sit amongst greatness is what he wanted to.
According to Fred, Jason Taylor was the key factor of our linebacker core last year. We thought he was going to sign, and that is why we did not make other arrangements. So what was the excuse this year? We knew we were going to get rid of that P.O.S. Thomas.
That means piece of.
Thanks. It does not even appear that we pursued Taylor this year. What do we think about this? I really cannot believe how dreadful our outside linebacking core is. You could legitimately argue that we do not have one true NFL starter.
I think that's a legitimate argument. Refresh my memory, I thought there was some discussion of Jason Taylor, and I thought Mr. Kraft even kind of spoke openly on the record about he had a home here if he wanted to come here, and he didn't want to.
2 years ago.
I thought it was this year, too. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think that was 2 years ago that he said that it's all up to him. He has the offer, and we're, you know.
Okay.
But I don't really think, I think the Jets were the team from the start this year. I mean,
right.
I don't really think that there's anything you can criticize for Jason Taylor. You could criticize they didn't get anybody else.
I also think he's half the man he used to be.
Yeah, I would feel better about the situation, but not a whole lot better. Dave in North Park says that the Saints went the length of the field on their third drive, in which they converted a fourth down, not their second drive. Yeah, no, he said I misheard what you said, Paul.
No, Paul said the Patriots went the length of the field.
Yeah, the Patriots went the length of the field on the second drive. What I thought
was
more impressive
better than
was the Patriots' defense. Stop forcing 2-3 and outs to start the game,
right?
And not giving up a drive until the third drive.
Took that one as a good sign because
they made them really work for it.
The longest completion was 11 yards.
Let's see.
They could have done that a year ago. Might have been different.
That drive. Are you talking about the Saints drive too?
Yeah,
the third drive.
That drive was aided by that pass interference penalty on fourth down.
Well, that eliminated a touchdown, by the way. Anyway, you gotta say it was, you know, that was the one negative was Butler on that. Butler was beaten badly on that play. Let's see, Caesar is in California.
Julio,
do you really think the Patriots have enough firepower at receiver to score a lot of points if Welker and Moss gets hurt? Welker or Moss gets hurt, who will step up? I am frustrated. The Pats have not done much to try and make a deal for a wide receiver in the offseason. What are your thoughts? I personally think wide receiver has quickly morphed into one of the more secure positions on the roster. I don't know how you feel, Andy.
Yeah, I'm in the middle somewhere.
I spent the entire offseason wondering who was going to catch passes. I mean, I think with Moss, Welker, Edelman, and Tate, I think you're probably going to be okay there with your top four.
I just look at it like I look at most positions. If someone loses their best at any position, they're in trouble. Not too many teams have third and fourth options that are elite.
You don't have guys on your roster that are going to step in and seamlessly fill the void of Randy Moss.
Right. Or even Wes Welker, because I'm not of the belief yet that Julian Edelman is
I just feel like
clone
as,
Welker.
As third and fourth guys, Edelman and Tate are fine.
Tate, I'm not sold on. But
listen, do
I
expect
need
him
to
go out there
on the field?
Do I expect him to go out and catch 60 or 70 passes? No, but I think as a fourth or fifth, you know, fourth option, yeah, I think he'll
but
be
I,
okay.
I think what you hit on is the key. It's not about catches.
If
they go a month,
if he's not
and Brady
where he's
doesn't know where
be.
He is, he becomes irrelevant because Brady will say, "Not worth my time. Cannot take chances with you. Peace out." So it's not even about the catches. It's about comfort with the quarterback.
Let's see here.
A lot of emails.
We do have a lot of emails.
Read some.
TG again. Got to agree with Kevin from New Mexico. There just is more football talk when Fred is not on the show.
Well, that's not fair.
And that phone call confirmed the sentiment.
It's when there's any twosome. You need the third guy to be able to screw around.
You can't have fun. Andrew's in Oklahoma City. Enjoying the show today, guys. It simply feels less heavy, physically and metaphorically.
Well, it's still quite heavy.
I know what that means.
Because Paul's still fat.
I don't know. There's just not there's not as many people talking over each other.
I feel a lot better about the Pats winning division this year after watching our preseason opener and the Jets play the Giants. A buddy of mine that lives in Queens and is a diehard Jets fan flat out said the Jets were going to bend every team over and own everyone, and I'm just not seeing it. I don't think they have enough money, I mean corners, capable defenders to cover Moss, Welker, Edelbeast, G-Man, and H-Bomb. I don't see Dirty
it's
Sanchez.
It's G-Force.
I'm reading the email.
G-Men are the Giants. It's G-Force.
I don't see Sanchez leading this team anywhere but down the toilet. He was lucky to be a part of a weak quarterback class 2 years ago and will remain as such. That said, I was really excited to see how we matched up against the Saints' first stringers. Who do you guys see being the primary punt returner? I'd assume it's between Edelbeast and McCourty.
I think it's Edelbeast.
At this point, I see them as being even, so any insight would be great. I think Edelman will definitely be the punt returner.
Because they trust him decision-wise, and he's shown the ability to hit a big play.
I haven't seen McCourty return punts. Kicks, he was very effective.
Yes. Also, but I think they've already proven they trust Edelman. Yeah. They trust his decision-making. And that, to me, is as big as anything. And he's shown that he can make plays.
He says he wants to buy us a round of beer when he's in town for the Pats-Colts game. Just let him know where.
Paul's house.
Maybe I just drink to get drunk.
Maybe he can buy us one of those Miller Lite.
All right. Hey, here's one kind of getting to your – there's a Seattle – someone wrote in, there's a player who wears a number one jersey. It's the player who actually elicited this entire debate to start
watching it.
Mike Williams.
Seattle Seahawks has a wide receiver who currently wears number one.
That's why we started talking about it, because we saw him on the NFL Network.
Yeah, Bertney. Not Bert and Ernie.
Bertney.
Bertoni. Right. I like Bertney.
Stuff's good. You get it in the frozen food section. It takes 10 minutes to
cook. Bertoni is in Lake Worth, Florida, by the way. Thank you for that. But that's actually how we got on this whole topic to begin with, is we were watching a replay of the Seahawks game, and Mike Williams was out there with his number one, and Andy thought it was illegal.
And I still have my questions as to who it's legal for.
It may not be legal for a wide receiver. It might be a teen's number.
I believe it is.
Let's see here.
A lot of emails.
Paul is next up. Let's pretend for a second that Welker is 100% and Edelman is 100%. Would you expect them to be used together or separate in the offense?
Both.
I agree. I think they'll find ways to get them both on the field. I think they're either going to find ways to get Edelman in the backfield. We talked about that all summer. He's going to be used, I think, a little bit coming out of the backfield in various packages. They seem to want to get the ball in his hands.
Sure. They should. He's shown the ability
to run.
I've told you this.
He's faster than Welker.
He's close to special. He's close to passing the Andy Hart special test.
He might not be as quick as Welker, but he's faster than Welker.
Oh, he's definitely faster.
Also, rank the DBs best to worst, please.
Lee Bodden.
Butler McCourty.
Yeah, Butler McCourty. I'll give it to Butler, then McCourty. Can you do it again? Willie Wilhelm.
Well.
I think they're crossing.
We're going all
DBs.
Do we go? Merriweather there.
I haven't gotten to him yet.
Chung.
I haven't gotten to him yet.
Sanders.
Oh wait, I got to start with him. DBs. Okay, let's
over. I put Wheatley as the fourth corner.
Bodden. See, I think they're neck and neck right now in crossing. Their career trajectories are crossing, Paul. But I think those guys are pretty close. I find it hard to believe you can go from starting corner on the team. And I believe he started like 8 games to cut. Not one of your best backup corners, sub guys, anything. So I think those guys are neck and neck. I would put Merriweather,
I think Bodden's the best defensive back. I got to give him credit for a proven NFL career, consistent.
I think as of right now, you have to say that. I think that you could change that after, say, 8 games.
Sure.
But right now, he's the only one with a proven track record.
And then it really gets hard in the number 2 spot for me. Merriweather, do I give him credit for being proven as an okay player or discredit him for becoming he is what he is and I don't think he's ever going to get too much better and be what he should have been?
It is what it is.
I mean, I think he's a lot closer to Lawrence Maroney as first-round picks go than people want to give him credit for.
Right.
All of a sudden, he got a Pro Bowl, and he's pretty good. And he had, you know, Josh Freeman. Was it Josh Freeman or Josh Johnson? Throw him
Johnson.
The ball right in
Not
between
even
the
Freeman.
Numbers. I mean, I just think, for comparison's sake, I would say Maroney, everybody hates and is a bust that they want to run out of town. To me, Merriweather is the defensive version in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I agree. Paul was giving us props for being the A-team and appreciated listening and reading all the coverage the last few weeks. So we appreciate that, Paul. Thank you. Let's see. We'll end it off with my personal favorite, Todd. Hey, Fathead. That's you.
Hey, Fat Belly.
If you don't leave Brian Hoyer alone, I'm going to come down there and smack you around. You keep saying they would be better off keeping one quarterback. And sure, Hoyer is no Tom Brady, but he's accurate, reads the defense well, manages the game, and his arm is lots strong enough.
No, it isn't.
You make it sound like he can't get it over the line.
He can't.
You just watch the meathead linebackers and fullbacks and leave the quarterback to Paul Bledsoe. Your biggest fan, Todd, Nova Scotia.
Why don't you give your honest opinion on Brian Hoyer's arm?
I'm not reading the rest. That's just ridiculous.
You can time his out patterns on a sundial.
Listen,
tinkums.
They're in a lot of trouble if Brian Hoyer has to play. Can I leave it at that? Is that disrespectful?
Unless it becomes a skill competition trying to throw a ball into a garbage can, Brian Hoyer is not a guy that really instills a lot of confidence.
Is that over the top disrespectful? I don't think it is.
What?
I think they're in a lot of trouble if he has to play. I don't think he can play at an NFL level.
They can't punt at an NFL level. They can't
they can
run defense at an
you
NFL.
You think they can't punt at an NFL level. I don't. I think they're fine.
Shank.
All right.
I agree with Andy.
Shank the Romanian. Is he Romanian?
I thought he was Hungarian.
Shank the Hungarian.
I'm ready to make my pick, by the way, too.
What's your pick?
I know that both of you care.
You pick. Yeah.
I'm going 11-5.
You pick to click.
Yeah, 11-5.
All right, I'm ready to make my pick too. I'm going 11 months. The under over on your stay
okay.
here.
On your
gotcha.
Stay.
Gotcha. I'm going to write that down.
Wow. You won't make a year.
All right, we went a little bit over time, but I wanted to get those emails in. I appreciate the ineptitude of Fred Kirsch, and to a lesser extent, Eric Scalavino.
The pompous annoyancy.
They gave us absolutely nothing.
They really
from
did.
Flowery I mean, Branch.
See what happens when we leave the coverage to them. This is job security right here. This shows those two are not capable of going to an NFL practice and telling us anything.
Should have sent me down there.
Speaking of not capable, much you do a fine enough job effing things up from here.
Anyway, just as a reminder, we will not have a show on Thursday. Andy and I will travel to Atlanta. We'll join the Buffoon Twins for the Falcons game. And we will return for PFW in Progress next Tuesday. In the meantime, we will have a roster report podcast for you on Friday. We'll
be sleepy.
Sort of recap the game a little bit, and if anything happens in terms of the roster, obviously we'll break that down as well.
If it's anything like last Friday, be sure and listen. Holtz and Warren's.
Right. Special thanks to Paul Darville for providing a wonderful lunch today. And
high marks for the Kobe Beef Cheeseburger Pizza at CBS Scene.
See you next Tuesday.
That'll do it. Another PFW in Progress. We'll be back next week.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, God, yeah.
Patriots.com Radio.